Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for finding time in your hectic schedule. I know all of you are extremely busy people to be with us this morning at this meeting of the Public Service and Administration Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation Portfolio Committee. In welcoming you members, I would like to indicate that yesterday I had a session with the delegation from the Department of Defense. But once we have dealt with the apologies, I will then table my own take on my engagement with the Department of Defense. And we can then take it from there, honorable members. Are there any apologies? Honorable Lusoma and honorable Panepat after Lusoma.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. Probably it's an obvious one, which is not specific to any individual honorable member. It's the issue of traffic that other members might be delayed. But the formal apologies from Honorable Nyami Boy, he's at SWAPA event today, that dealing with the SASA and other related matters. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I'm not sure if you received it by writing, I doubt, but Honorable Zelda Jongbloed ended up in hospital last night. She is okay, but she won't be here today.
Please send our wishes for her speedy recovery. We want her back. Yes, Honourable Deputy Minister Cronin.
Thank you very much, Chair. And also just to say that your letter was addressed to the Minister and CC to me, Minister of Public Works. There's a cabinet committee, a real one, and the Minister's there, so I'm his deputy.
We actually appreciate that, Honourable Deputy Minister, and we do feel that the department is taking us seriously. The fact that you could find time in your hectic schedule to be here is sufficient enough to demonstrate your seriousness on the matters that are raised with the department. Thank you.
We also received
apology from Minister Melusi Gigaba, Minister of Home Affairs. We also received apologies from Advocate Ngakora Matlodi, and you'll recall that his brother passed away, and we also received an apology from Deputy Minister Pam Chwede. Okay, so when are you going to end? You keep on giving me all these papers now. Okay, and we also have another apology from the Department of Water Affairs, from Minister Nomvula Mnongwanyane. And finally, we have an apology from the Director General from the Department Water and Sanitation. That is actually quite serious, because I need to talk about those issues today. It is a serious concern. Maybe when I address the issues that I also wanted to address of defense, I will also be speaking on water affairs and administration. Yes, ma'am, at the back, sorry. If you can indicate your name, sorry, I don't like pointing people's fingers at people. It's nice to be called by your name, isn't it?
Yes, good morning. My name is Rendani Sadiki, Chief Financial Officer, Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. My acting DG is just at the late tenure portfolio committee. She will be joining me late, Ms. Leona Achari. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you very much.
I'm sorry, Chair, I thought you were going to capture this one for DM. I understand, or she has just written to the
issue. I was going to talk about her because she has actually stepped out. She's coming back later. because we told her that we are not dealing with her mental right now. So it belongs to the different set of categories of apologies. Members, I must say that, are there any other hands? Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Lebo Masolan from DPME. I would like to also tender an apology for our Minister in the Presidency, Minister Jeff Khadebe, and our DG as well.
Okay, a written apology is always appreciated than a verbal one, and the reasons for the absence are always appreciated if we could communicate that. Thank you. Members, as I pointed out to you previously, I think this committee has an enormous task at hand. One, as I said, without an efficient public administration and a responsive public administration, no matter how good our policies may be, we will not achieve the desired outcomes, and that is a prosperous South Africa, and so forth. Now, members, it is very, very concerning to me that it appears as though when we invited the departments to appear before this committee, based on the findings of the Public Service Commission, on their default, on the implementation of the 30-day payment policy, we found that the reasons that are cited, some of them are actually serious policy decisions for their defaulting. Well, and that's what is in the documentation of some. Especially with defense, I don't know if some of you have had time to look through that presentation that was circulated to us from the Department from the Minister of Defense. Now, it's extremely concerning to me because we are not, this committee is not necessarily here to hold the CFOs accountable. We are here to hold the executive accountable. Now, if a department on a very, very serious matter that is compromising the quality of services that we are supposed to be delivering to our people decides on the last minute that no, I am not coming, I have other priorities, I am not going to account to you, I would rather delegate this, sub-delegate this major responsibility to somebody far down who may not necessarily be able to respond to our questions. I do think that we really have to address that. It is extremely, extremely concerning. And on that score, I do need to appreciate Deputy Minister Cronin for taking his time to come before this committee. Because we are of the strong view that the three arms of government are equally important and they have a specific function to perform. It can't be that the executive would not take us seriously as a legislative arm when we are holding them, when we are calling them to account for their decisions or indecisions or things that are happening in their own departments. I am saying this so that you understand the context under which I was extremely concerned when I read the responses that came from the defense. And I was horrified. And I honestly don't think it's fair that I can ask the CFO to account for all the things that are happening in that department. I do think that the gravity of the reasons that have been given as to why the Ministry of Defense is unable and won't be able, in fact they are actually retrogressing and they may be getting worse, because my engagements that I had with the CFO are suggesting that if a particular issue that he has raised with me, and that is in your documents, is not addressed like yesterday, we are heading for a very, very serious challenge. And we cannot afford to have such a critical department, you know, be found wanting or to be collapsing when we are there. And by the way, for your own information, when I talk to you, I'm talking to you because I'm emerging from a process that was very, very painful of the SABC. And part of the reason why we had serious challenges at SABC, it was because of this oversight role that was not being played prudentially and effectively. And this committee is not going to be getting into that list to a point where issues have to be, you know, address it through an ad hoc committee when we are there as a portfolio committee on public service and administration. We are not going to allow that. And I'm not saying that to scold at you, but I am saying we are partners. We just have different responsibilities. Respect our responsibilities because they form part of the checks and balances and of ensuring that South Africa achieves what is contained in the Constitution and in the National Development Plan. Of course, already we are already disadvantaged by the fact that we are experiencing, we are going through a very, very serious economic contraction, and it's, we are not going to be able to achieve the targets that we are meant, that we have set ourselves for 2030. And it is within that context that, members, I am not going to allow a situation where serious matters, it's okay where the minister or the DG sub-delegates to a CFO or another official, you know, to clarify on technical matters. But on policy matters, on matters of strategic importance, no, we cannot allow that. We simply cannot allow that. But when we get to that stage, when we deal with the defense, we would deal with that matter. Because, members, you must remember that we decided that out of the 10, out of all the departments in the government, we asked the Public Service Commission to give us the top 10 defaulters in government in terms of this policy. And some of us are actually hurting. We are from the African National Congress. And although when we are here, we assume a much bigger role than that of a sectorial party position. But it is hurtful when, you know, we adopt a resolution that we want to ensure that we facilitate growth in this country. But we find that our small businesses, because it is our small businesses that are affected by this post-30-day policy, on the main, it is them. It is those small businesses that will have serious challenges with cash flows. I mean, big businesses, when you don't pay them within 30 days, they have sufficient reserves. They can always go back to their cash reserves and replace them shortly once they are paid. With small businesses, you are actually reducing them to survivalist. They are not going to move to the next level. And is that what we want? That's not what you want. And that's the seriousness and the gravity of the importance of this particular policy. And when we get to that stage, members, I'm hoping that you are going to share the same perspectives with me, because I honestly, honestly don't think we should let ministers, deputy ministers, DGs, and DGs in particular as well, because they should be coming here as well, to sub-delegate. They are important duty of accounting to this committee. We are not going to allow that. We are going to explore every avenue to get them to this committee. And we are going to do our job without fear, favor, or prejudice. I've heard those words so many times, and I think each time I say them, they give a new, fresher meaning and perspective to them. And I thought, you know, they can only apply in other contexts and not in other contexts. But they actually apply to us as members of this committee as well, that we have to act without fear, favor, or prejudice. There's no department that we are going to be treating with kids gloves. We are going to be engaging as equal arms of government. And that's the bottom line. And we need to be accorded the respect that we deserve. Honorable members, there are outstanding minutes of the previous meeting. Because I do not want us to spend a lot of time with this, I would like members to, and you've had enough time to look at these minutes. It was the time before I was here. I wanted to give us, I'm going to give you each time to speak, to tell me where are the problems that you see so that we can correct them, and after that I get a mover and a seconder. And again, we are going to ensure that when we get to the next meetings, we don't have the backlog of minutes. We can't be looking at minutes of 2015 and 2017. You know? But I'm just going to leave it to you members. Honorable Sommer, do you want to lead the way, please, quickly, so that we can move on to the next, to the business of the day?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It's myself and Honorable Dombela. I've gone through the minutes, Chair. From my side, I don't have anything and corrections to make, because it was a presentation to the committee, not necessarily with an intention of making a decision. The first minutes, Chair. But
are you referring to the set of the 19th of August 2015?
Yes, Chair, the 19th.
Okay, thank you. So, Honorable Sommer, I assume that Honorable Sommer is moving for the adoption of this minute, and the Honorable Dombela is seconding. Thank you very much. So that concludes our thing on the minutes of the 19th August 2015. Then we have minutes of the 23rd. Yes, of the 23rd of... Oh, there is a... Yeah, of the 23rd of September 2015. Yes, it's also the two of you. You see, there have been a lot of changes in this committee. No. I'm not going to allow not the DA, not the NFP, not the IFP, not the ANC to leave this committee anymore. I'm going to protest. I'm going to protest. I want permanent members in this committee so that there is a continuity. Yes, Honorable Sama, Honorable Ndombela, maybe. So Honorable Ndombela moves for the adoption of the minutes of the 23rd September and seconded by Honorable Mata. Thank you very much. No, with that with the minutes of the 19th of August. Is there any other set, Honorable Lusoma, of the
2015? Yes, Chair, is the 23rd September?
We've dealt with that one, and Honorable Matao seconded.
Okay, my apology to be this, the 10th May 2016.
We have dealt with the 10th May 2016. Oh, okay. The 10th May 2016, and we are relying on the members that were there, please. Appella, do I have to name the members that were there? It's not fair. Honorable Ntombela, you were there. Honorable Soma was not there. No, I mean, I'm talking about the minutes. This is the written record. It's saying you were not there. Surely then you have to correct it then before you move it, if you were there.
No, Chair, I was not there.
Chairperson.
Okay, you were not there because you are cited as having apologized, yes?
I'll have no alternative but to move for adoption and second myself.
Well, we'll have to just check if that is acceptable because we don't have the members here. Yeah, okay. So we'll just constantly hold that it was only he confirmed that it's a true record. Okay, members. Members, as I said, I'm not sure if I did indicate earlier on that most of the activities of this committee are also influenced by the inputs from the planning, Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. And I think this particular department has a very, very critical role to play. And we really, really have to ensure that it's positioned correctly so that its role is understood and appreciated. And I do think that before we engage on these matters of the 30-day payment, we give this department to give us a briefing on their own observations or activities or present whatever presentation on the day-to-day payment. Who is going to be presenting on behalf of the department? Over to you, ma'am.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues,
you can't be honorable anyway.
Very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable
Sorry, Irene, you have 15 minutes, ne? Okay. To make the presentation.
Sure. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues. My name is Irene from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and we'll be taking you through the work that we're doing around the payment of invoices in government departments. I'll try to be as quick as possible. We do have the presentation, but with your permission, Chairperson, we have also distributed an additional document, which I think is very important. So somewhere in between the presentation, I'll take you to that document so that we can be able to see the details of what we will be presenting. So the purpose of the presentation is very straight, to give you an analysis of payment of invoices, progress that we have made, and also highlight the impact of the non-payment, and also highlight some of the challenges that we experience. Chairperson, this slide basically talks to the regulations and the policy environment in relation to this matter. I don't need to go into the details. We know about the Public Finance Management Act and the instructions that are required for us to comply with the 30-day payment. But of importance, Chairperson, you indicated the issue of the NDP and the fact that we envisage to reduce unemployment by creating 11 million jobs by 2030. And as you know, we're dealing with the three triple challenges of unemployment, inequality, and poverty. But critical to note that 2.1 SMMEs and 150 are in the medium-sized businesses. And the fact that this sector actually employs 7.3 million people, and it contributes 42% of our GDP. However, it is important to note, as we have indicated earlier on, that our entrepreneurial participation rate remains very low. And part of the problem is that we're not able to sustain small business because partly we also do not pay them for the services that they render to us. I'm going to run quickly on this slide. This is the report on the exception reports that departments provide to National Treasury. In essence, in December 2016, our report will be more focused on the quarter three of this financial year, October, November, December, although we'll give you a trend so that you can see in terms of how we've been doing. But national departments have submitted 90% of their exception reports. Now, if you look at the comparison, one would say there is a bit of progress. Sorry, I'm moving very fast here. This is the exception report. So if you look here, there is a bit of progress in terms of the submission of progress report, I mean exception report, if you compare with the previous year where we were at 78%. And then we move on now, Chairperson, to the performance of national departments in terms of number of invoices paid after 30 days. So I just need to mention here, Chairperson, that we are monitoring invoices that are paid after 30 days and invoices that are older than 30 days are not paid. Both of those categories are not compliant with the requirements. But if you look at the slide that we have here, it shows that for the month of October, November, and December, we have 9,000, 11,000, and 10,000 invoices respectively for those months that were paid after 30 days. And obviously there we give an analysis of the regression from the first month and also the improvement to the last part of the quarter. And then again, the rent values of the invoices, if you look there, it will show us that in October we had 147 million invoices paid after 30 days, and then it progresses to 121, and then it goes again to 217. And you can make the comparison with the previous year. So the red bar would be 2015. So this is, again, the analysis of the graph that I've given earlier on. Chairperson, I would like to take you now to the document that I was referring to. If you have it in front of you, if you go to page 3 of that document, you would see that when we talk about the payment of invoices, overall we've got 40 national departments. So you have got the first set of departments that have demonstrated, unfortunately this information is not on the slide because we have given the total number of departments. Essentially, you have got the first part of departments. Those departments had zero invoices, zero values. So they have fully complied with the 30-day payment of invoices. You have got the second category of invoices again. Our analysis in the quarter shows that those departments have improved when you compare from the beginning of the quarter to the end of the quarter. You have got the last category of departments again, which is on page 4 of the document, and those departments have deteriorated. Now, of the 10,000 invoices that we're talking about that have been paid after 30 days, which amounts to the 217, who are we really talking about here? Chairperson, 6,700 of those invoices belong to Department of Defense, 1,700 of those invoices belong to Department of Public Works. Justice and Constitutional Development is 490 invoices. Military Veterans, 395. IT, 243. So in essence, those are the departments that have contributed significantly to those 10,000 invoices that we said they were paid after 30 days. However, I also need to mention, Chairperson, that whilst here we're focusing on the number of invoices, we're also concerned about departments that do not necessarily have huge invoices, but the cost of those invoices is very significant because we're talking about radical economic transformation. So a department might sit with less invoices, but the value is very huge to the point that if that money is not paid to the service providers, we're going to have a problem in the economy. And in this category, we're talking DCOC in this quarter that had 57 invoices to 83 million paid after 30 days. Water and sanitation, 121, 25 million. Police, 225 to 13 million. Arts and culture, 3 invoices, 9 million. Home affairs, 54 invoices to 8 million. So those were the problematic areas on invoices paid after 30 days. Now we come to the serious one. These are the invoices older than 30 days and not paid. So that money is still sitting with departments as of December, and it's not in the economy. So if you look at this category, Chairperson, you will find that for national departments in October, we had 7,000 invoices, November, 1,000 invoices, December, 11,000 invoices. Again, if I refer you to that document that I spoke about, if you look at page 5, it would show you that actually we have about 19 departments, Chairperson, that are doing very well on payment of invoices. Zero invoices, zero values. We have got the second category again that has shown improvement during this quarter, and we have got the third category that is really struggling. Now, of the 11,600 invoices...
Sorry to interrupt you. I'm not sure all of us have got the document to which... I certainly don't have the document to which you're referring.
We have copies. Can we organize copies?
So what I've got in front of me, apart from our own presentation, is the slide and then an annexure A and an annexure B, but I suspect you're referring to... No,
it's this document. We are sorry about that, Minister. I think it might be that maybe they only made copies for the members or whatever. Anzamene, can we make sure that this is printed quickly? Yeah, if we can get a copy and have it. Or you have an edit?
I have one copy here.
Oh, okay. I think it looks like even other members did not get this copy. So all the members don't have this copy. How did it happen? No, how come I'm the only one? I don't want to be treated specially here. We have to prove to... No, and exactly. I don't accept that. Can we just make sure that we rectify this problem, please, urgently? Okay. What do we do in the interim? Yes.
I think we put up our hands if we want to speak in this committee. Chairperson, you can't follow figures presenting like this without reading it properly. And we can't have an informed discussion if you don't have a document with so many figures on it.
You know, let me tell you why I'm actually sympathetic to the members that do not have the document. Remember, all the subsequent presentations are on this particular issue, on the 30-day payment. And if the members don't have the document before them, they may not be able to engage, and in fact we are actually disenable them from performing their oversight accordingly. There are quite a number of issues that are critical that are emanating out of your document. I'm not sure if I should just let members have tea for a few minutes whilst waiting for this document. Maybe go and have some tea or stretch, go to the ladies. I promise you within no time we will cover this. Yes, Honorable Lusoma.
I think, Chair, that your proposal would be the most appropriate one, because we have been waiting for the for the whole 18 months for this report to come and engage on it. So we will have that 10-minute stretch break.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, okay.
Well, you are most welcome to go to ladies. I received it this morning. I don't know how my PA managed to get it. But I'm told that it's been a tendency with this particular department that the DG sometimes will not necessarily be signing off documents. And that is why it's very difficult to engage meaningfully with the administration below the level of DG, because it's very difficult for them to take ownership, because honestly, at their level, you might actually find that a director has actually sent the documents to the DG. A director can't send a document direct to us. You know, the DG must sign off, and that is why it's important that even in issues as small, in matters like this one, which may seem very small, but can really take, I mean, I'm from the banking sector, ne? So the bottom line to me is very important. And, you know, time is money. And when you have to toil around and you are supposed to be doing other things, and now we have to break so that, you know, we organize the documents, it's not right. And it reflects badly on our efficiencies as the state, and we can't allow that. Over to you, ma'am. The document, everybody has it now. Everyone has it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Can you proceed, ma'am? We are really sorry about that. I promise you, we are not going to allow this again. If they haven't given us the documents, we will not. We will not allow departments to make presentations. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Going back to the department, so that we can recap the web document. If you look at page 3 of page 14, that is where we were talking about invoices paid after 30 days for the quarter. So you will see there we have got a table where we've just indicated the month, which is October, November, and December. But what we were saying essentially was that if you look at the following table there, you have got a number of invoices that shows zero values and zero invoices. So those departments have been paying on time. Then you have got the second category of invoices of departments, starting there with water and sanitation. Those departments have shown improvement in the quarter. And then you have got the third category of departments, which is at page 4. You will see in terms of the last column where we say quarter 3 performance, they've deteriorated in the quarter. And again, the point that I was making, Chairperson, was that of the 10,000 invoices, it is important that we don't just make a general statement to say departments don't pay, who doesn't pay, and how much do they not pay, and how many invoices do they not pay. Of those 10,000 invoices, you will see that 6,700 were with Department of Defense, 1.7 with Public Works, Justice and Constitutional Development, 490, military veterans, 395, and IT like that. So if you look at the web document again, the next paragraph, which is 3.3.5, that is where I was making a point to say that we are also worried about departments that do not necessarily sit with many invoices, but the values thereof, to us, they are a problem, because that money, if it's not paid to service providers on time, it's going to have a huge implication in terms of how they sustain their businesses. And I've already spoken to those departments with the number of invoices and their values. So we move on again to the next area, which I was at when we got interrupted, Chairperson, which is the invoices older than 30 days and not paid. So the first category, those invoices have been paid, but they were not paid on time. So it's still a problem for us. This category, those are the invoices that were not paid at all as at the end of December. And you will see at that page 5 that you have got 7,000 invoices in October, November 1.2, December 11,000. When you look at the table that follows, it also shows you about 19 departments, Chairperson, that have been doing well in terms of the payment of the invoices. The second category, again, those are the departments that have improved. The third category, those are the departments that have deteriorated. Now, amongst those that have deteriorated, Chairperson, if you look at the 11,000 invoices, 10,000 of them actually are with the Department of Public Works, followed by Justice and Constitutional Development at 592, Home Affairs at 159, International Relations at 116, and obviously the rest would be with the other departments. And as we move on, Chairperson, we can go to the provincial we can go to the provincial departments in terms of their performance with invoices. And here I will need an assistance with I'm trying to press here. Yeah, it says frozen. Okay, I think now it's coming. Okay, as we move on now, we go to the provincial departments. And in terms of provincial departments, you will see, Chairperson, that in terms of submission of exception reports, in December they were at 89% if you compare with the previous year. I'm now on the slide. If you compare with the previous year, they were at 67. We're not really happy with that. It's a bit of progress, but that is important because if departments don't report accurately, then our analysis is not going to be accurate as well. That means there are certain invoices that they're not telling us what is happening with those invoices. And again, with provincial departments, you will see that when we talk about invoices paid after 30 days, in October, November, December, if you like, you can refer to the document or you can refer to the slides. In the document, we're at page 8. So there you will see that in October, we had 28,000 invoices. November, we had 26,000 invoices. December, we had 21,000 invoices, ranging from 1.8 billion, and in December, it was 2 billion. And you will see the performance of the departments in terms of the values of those invoices. As I've spoken to that, if you look at the graph there, it will tell you that we had 1.8 in October, we had 1.6 in November, we had 2 billion in December. Now, where is the problem again in relation to the performance of the provinces? If you refer to the document again at page 8, you will see all those provinces. When we talk about the 21,000 invoices that were not paid, that were paid after 30 days in December, Eastern Cape had 7,000 invoices, and Northwest, Gauteng rather, had 5,313 invoices, and then followed by Northwest at 3,457 invoices. So those are the provinces that are really giving us a challenge. And so if you look at invoices older than 30 days and not paid, again, I need to emphasize that this is where we really have a problem because those invoices have not been paid at all, so government is sitting with the money. So in terms of the number of the invoices, in October we had 60,000 invoices, November, again 60,000, in December, 65,000. And the values there would range from 4.5 billion, and in December it was 4.8 billion. And where is the problem again? Of the 65,000 invoices at provincial level that were not paid in December, 40,000 of those invoices were sitting in one province, which is Gauteng. and that is followed by Eastern Cape, 12,000 invoices. And obviously, we really commend the progress made by Mpumalanga, where they had very few invoices. And Chairperson, these were the figures that I spoke to, these are the rent values that I spoke to. Now, when we talk about invoices that are not paid, the majority of them, they're really sitting at provincial level, as you would have seen the number of invoices and the values of those invoices. But also at provincial level, what we picked up is that the problem is largely with the health sector and the education sector. So if you look at the percentage of invoices that are paid, if you look at the percentage of invoices that are paid after 30 days at provincial level, 83% of the transgressors was the health across provinces in 2016 December. And then again in December 2016, older than 30 days and not paid, 90% of the transgressions were at health across all provinces. Obviously, housing dominating the non-payment. And then, Chairperson, the impact of non-payment of small business, I think you alluded to that, cash flow problems of SMMEs, they are forced to borrow money and to meet their contractual obligations. Some of them have been closed down, retrenchments, counterproductive towards government's mandate of creating sustainable jobs. Service deliveries compromise reputational risk to government and it worsens the perception of corruption. Chairperson, given the importance of this matter, Cabinet established, took a decision in 2015 that a special unit be created within the DPME, and that is the work that we are doing to deal with this 30-day payment. So what we did first, we had a public hearing with this portfolio committee in August 2015 where service providers were called in. We supported the committee. Service providers raised their concerns. We assisted in terms of resolving those complaints that were not paid with the service providers. So in essence, we do report to FOSAT on this matter. We do report to Cabinet in terms of outcome 12. It's one of the indicators that we report to. And we do have regular meetings and engagements with CFOs. I must say, Chairperson, that we have met with the Department of Defense, colleagues that are in this room. We have met with the Department of Public Works, colleagues that are in this room, Department of Water and Sanitation, Department of Home Affairs. And also we have gone to Gauteng, province. We have met with Education and Health. And we have met with Northwest, we have met with KZN, and we have met with Northern Cape. And those are the areas that at that time we felt that as DPME we were not happy with the progress that they were making. And also what we do within that unit is that every day we receive complaints from service providers that are saying we have not been paid by a department of so-and-so. So what we do is we contact the department and we talk to the CFOs. Spoken to a number of them in the room here to say, please, can you make sure that this service provider is paid? We have got about 190 cases that have been lodged with us. These are not invoices, they are cases. So in some instances, you have, like your travel agent, a travel agent will come to you with about 150 invoices and to say, I've not been paid. So these are the cases, and 68 have been resolved. And some of them are still in progress, and others are obviously under litigation. And when they're under litigation, they're sub judice, we are not able to assist them. And as I move forward, Chairperson, we do have a number of challenges, obviously. And one that really worries us is that if you look at this slide, we have got a number of service providers that say, please help me, but do it in confidence, because I don't want the department to know. If they know, they're going to victimize me and I'm going to lose my job. And you will see in that slide, we're just giving you an account of one service provider who said to us, don't ban me. But it becomes very difficult because you can't go to the department and say, please help Mr. X so that he gets his money, if we don't know who is Mr. X and how much is owed and so on. So we say to them, please give us information so that we can help you. But it becomes really difficult, and I'm glad one of the CFO, this service provider that has complained about is here, and we'll be able to talk, because it's a case that we received recently, we'll talk to them, and also to plead with them that they treat it in confidence, because people don't want to lose their jobs. And then some of the things that we pick up as we visit this department is that there are systematic challenges of IT, financial delegations in place, are not in place, capacity constraints, lack of adherence to supply chain management is a problem. And I really want to make a plea to the CFO to make sure that colleagues in the department, they adhere to this. And if I can make just one example, which I always make, a service provider is here to cater for about 20 people. Then as a project manager, I realized later on in the day that actually 30 people have confirmed. We ask the poor service provider to cater for 30 people. When the invoice comes, it says 30 people. No longer the order number of 20 people that we requested. Then it becomes a crisis. The poor person is not paid, people are running around, they're not taking calls, they're not responding to the poor service provider. And it's not the problem of the service provider, it is our problem. So that when we change order numbers, when we change our procurement, we need to be able to go back to our system and say, now please cater for 30 people, not the 20 people, rather than frustrating people. And those are some of the things that we find to be really sad. So contractual disagreements are some of the issues where we are not able to assist with those invoices, because now it's no longer a legitimate invoice. So people are disagreeing that in terms of my job spec, I wanted this, you provided this. So we say, please can you sit down and really sort out this matter, provide what is needed, your department, when you are happy, you sort it out, then we have a legitimate invoice that we can be able to. So those are some of the issues that we're dealing with. Subcontracting, we have a very serious issue on this matter. So Irene is contracted by a department, and I subcontract somebody else. When the department doesn't pay, the other person, when they're not paid, they believe that they have not been paid by government, because the work that they provided is for government. So in that case, again, we do come in and we interact with the department to say, can you please pay this person so that they can pay the subcontractor. And Chairperson, on the last slide that we have, these are just some of the reviews that we get from service providers that we have been able to assist in their payment. And perhaps, Chairperson, if you can allow me, because this matter really worries us of the Department of Health in Gauteng. If you can allow just 2 minutes, I want my colleague to also indicate some of the major challenges in Gauteng in health, because we really believe that if Gauteng as a province that is progressing, if it has got problems at health level, and we have challenges there in terms of payment, we might it might affect other provinces, if you allow us.
Okay, no, I will allow you just 2 minutes to comment on that. But Honorable Lusoma, I saw your hand. Do you want to speak, or do you want us to move with on with them before you come in?
No. I think I would not go too far from what you have just said, Chair. But I was going to say that probably we need also to have a plan. How do we then deal with the provinces? Because it's not the only province, even KZN and Free State and all that. But I thought probably for now, let's concentrate on the national department that you have prioritized. Then during the course of our term, then we can deal with that one as a second leg. But nevertheless, I agree with you.
Yes, I think let's put the provinces on the parking lot, because that then becomes our own strategy. How do we engage with provinces? Maybe you may also wish to advise on how best we can get the provinces to account, because it looks like the concentration of the defaulters is in provinces, and if we are not addressing provinces, we are then working backwards, we're not working forward. So we need to formulate a strategy of how we get them here. Over to you, sir, the one that is going to just 2 minutes just to tell us what's happening in Gauteng.
Okay. Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. I won't go into much details. I think this is just an opportunity for us to emphasize the challenge that the health sector is facing. And we often talk about this as some sort of a ticking time bomb, because, you know, if we don't pay the service providers, then it has a direct impact on the on service delivery. We have one of the organizations that supply medical equipment to the health sector, Summit, is owed about $600 million. And the impact is that some operations can't take place, equipment can't be supplied to hospitals, and some of the service providers that we've been interacting with saying that they've got orders and there's a long time period in terms of ordering those equipment from abroad. So then they can't place orders because their cash flow is being adversely affected. But if you look at the picture that my colleague has painted, of the 4.7 billion, just to emphasize this, 4.7 billion that provinces owe, 3.3 billion of that is the Gauteng Department of Health. And so the challenges that they experience is budgetary pressures. And so what is happening now? At the moment, as we speak, they've stopped paying the service providers because they've run out of cash. So in April, when they get the cash from the new financial year, then they have accruals that then eat into their budget. So this is the challenge that we needed to highlight, and it's just a pity that Gauteng Health Department is not here. But I think, Honourable Chairperson, this is the picture that we just wanted to highlight. And one of the most concerning issues is the impact on the budget of the health sector of medical legal claims. This is the litigation issues for negligence, medical negligence, and the amounts are quite scary. And if you remember what the situation was with the road accident fund, and we've since closed that loophole, and the legal fraternity now sees this as a cash cow, and this poses a serious threat to the fiscus, and the cases that we've seen really are paint a very bleak picture. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you. There you are, members. Quickly, before we move on, do you want us to go to the department before we engage on this presentation, or do you want me to ask that on the questions of clarity, so that when we engage, we can engage based on the information? Because to me, the department, it's really for them to tell us why they are not doing what they are supposed to do. Yes.
My future, let's go to the department and engage with them. Then we can take up from there. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Honourable Simon.
Thank you, Chair. No, I agree with what the whip of the committee is saying, but I would like to have a clarity from the DPME on one issue.
Yes.
It's the graph or the amount that you have picked up on national department. Now, bearing in mind that our government has got 3 spheres and the implementation takes place in the provinces. Now, the national departments, if they're sitting where they are sitting now, exactly the outcome, was it based on maybe on human resource activities, or were they based on what, because national departments are more of policy a formulation rather than implementation of the activities. I just need a clarity on that issue, Chairperson, just to understand which is for the national department to be where they are exactly. If they did do that research, was it based on what activity? Was it the human resource activity?
Okay. Let me give you the
quickly to
just
to answer that question,
so that we can move on to the next presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. the point made is accurate. So a lot of national departments, there are more of policy issues, whereas implementation, if you look at health, so implementation is really at provincial level, at district level, and so on. Education, again, and so that's where you find a lot of activities taking place there. But the work that we do around MPET, when we assess departments on the standard of financial management, we find that they've also put in place systems such as your standard operating procedures, delegations in some instances that are there. So it is much easier at national rather than at provincial. Although we have seen here that you still have other national departments that are still battling. But obviously provinces are battling because the implementation is largely at that sphere of government. And also I must say, although we are not necessarily monitoring local government here, Chairperson, we do have challenges with municipalities. So when service providers come to us, we don't say, we deal with national and provincial. Still, we take that query and we go to the municipality and say, can you please pay this person? The same applies to entities. We are really struggling, but I think that's the discussion for another day. We're really struggling with a number of entities that are also not paying service providers. Just one last point, if Chairperson will allow me. Through the unit, what we have done in the last couple of months, about 15 months, we have been able to pay, not to pay, but to assist that at least about 280 million is paid to those service providers that came to us, not just national departments, everybody, municipalities, entities, national and provincial departments.
I think we will have to engage on that one, on the exclusion of municipalities, because to me, I mean, how else do you achieve local economic development if you are going to be excluding municipalities? So we will have to look at that. Honourable members, earlier on I had said it to you, I am really, really feeling very strongly about the issues. I went through the presentation of defence, and the reasons that are given there are such that on why they have defaulted or why they are the worst performing amongst the worst performing in terms of the steady day policy. The reasons given there are such that you cannot only hold, you cannot just hold the CFO accountable. You need the DG, you need the minister here, and you need those key individuals in that department who can really speak into these issues. And the gravity of the situation there is such that I'm not sure if it's going to assist us at all if we proceed with this with this presentation from the faith. I feel strongly that we need to, if the committee can allow me to write to these particular departments, sensitize them on the gravity of the situation and the fact that we need them in person, the minister and DG in person, to appear before this committee. Because this is not just a technical matter where, you know, it's based on, with defense, it's different. It's not like, you know, it's the CFO, Sokela. It's not just, your case is not just about CFO and his team not being able to process the invoices on timely and so forth. It involves a range of other issues. It involves so many issues. Some of them have got to do with IT that is as old as 1983. So we don't want to go there. And we don't understand why, how would they, I mean, if you think of yourself, Honorable Modal, 1983, you were using a typewriter, right? I don't even think you know now how it looks like. You almost have to figure out how it looks like. These are the issues that we are dealing with them. And I'm not sure if members, if it's okay for us to go ahead with defense. I honestly, honestly think we need to get the DG and the minister here, or their deputy here, to answer. Honorable Tech?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't believe that it will be correct for us to discuss this matter yet, because we will basically get nowhere discussing it here. And it will happen, so happen that we'll have to come back again and discuss the matter again. We understand that the Department of Defense reports to the Defense Portfolio Committee, Military Veterans Defense, and we understand that people sit there, they are vetted. The people that they are vetted, and this committee is not vetted. Members of this committee have not been vetted. But we are saying, therefore we are saying that, look, it would be better if we have the minister herself and the DG of the committee of the Defense Portfolio Department to be present. Because there are certain issues we want to discuss with them. And we believe that the answers can only come from them. With all due respect to you, sir, we don't, it's not that we are saying that you are junior, you cannot discuss these matters here, but we prefer it would be better if we have the minister here directly and the DG of the department in order for us to discuss this thing productively here. So I don't believe we should discuss it today. Thank you.
Honorable Farrebat and Honorable Mata, after that.
Well, Chair, I would be in support, but we must always remember that the CFO is the accounting officer when it comes to the finances. But I do agree, if you look through this document, there are issues of the database, et cetera, and therefore the DG is the accounting officer as well. You know, many things connected to the DGs could be in here. But, and maybe the political leader of that department, so I would support it.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with my colleague. There's a very important element here, and we shouldn't miss that. If you look at the special unit's comments there, this thing about bad culture in the public service, that's part of it. That's very, very important. And I think by asking the executives to be here, we will be sending another important message. This issue is serious. This thing of not paying people in time is serious. We have said it before. We engaged the minister last week during question time about it. It's very, very important. So I think it's important that we do that.
Yeah. Honorable members, thank you very much. I must say that I need to especially express my word of gratitude to Mr. Sekela, because we had a long discussions with him yesterday. And I actually realized that the problems that are there have got nothing to do with his capacity or ability to do his work as the CFO. And they are not necessary, although the matters are financial in nature, but they are largely policy, broad policy issues, not necessarily financial policy in nature. And I think, sir, you will really forgive the committee for not allowing you to speak, and probably you will then go back and tell them that we want them here. You want to say something, so Kella, before you go.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I will convey the message to the accounting officer and to the minister, to say the committee feels very strongly that this type of the thing that are happening within the department, more especially in this on the financial system and the procurement system, it needed them to come to this committee to come and explain. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for your understanding, sir. Can we move on to public works? Once more, Minister, Deputy Minister, welcome, and thank you for being here. And you've saved your department today for being here. As you can see, we are not prepared to, we want these policies to be implemented. And as you have seen, those people that did not have senior people, the accounting, the people that are accountable, we have to give them marching orders. So, well done for being here, Minister. We really appreciate that, because you are also going to be sending a strong message to your colleagues that, hey, is in your public service and administration.
Thank you very much. You don't need to thank me for coming. It's my duty and responsibility, obviously, to, as you correctly said at the beginning, it's the duty of the political heads of departments to engage actively with Parliament. So thank you very much for inviting us. And let me just to repeat Minister Mercy's apology. He would very much like to. He, in fact, within the department, has been the one driving and championing the issue of ensuring that we meet the 30-day payment requirement. Chairperson, if I could, before the colleagues, let me just indicate that Ms. Wonke Dlabantu, our Director General, is present, our CFO, Cox Mokoro, is present, and then there are other colleagues as well from the Department of Public Works. If I could just make a few opening remarks about the matter. The first issue was that the question that was asked, are national departments not policy departments by and large? Well, in the case of the Department of Public Works, and specifically the property management trading entity, is a very significant doing department. The DG will remind me of how many buildings, basically, and properties we're looking after, and we're the custodian for. DG? 92,500 odd buildings. We're responsible for their maintenance, upkeep, leasing out, when we lease out, lease in, when we lease in, and so forth, major repairs, and so on. The Department of Public Works itself is largely a policy department, but then we have this vast, vast property portfolio, and obviously, therefore, lots of accounts to account for. So that would be the first point. The second thing, just to say that, also to express appreciation, by the way, to our colleagues from monitoring and evaluation. I know that they and the colleague did, Irene did mention this. There's been ongoing high-level contact between the two departments at a senior management level, and I think that's very important. And we really appreciate those interactions and the pressure that is put on us to ensure that we fulfil mandates. The question of the 30-day payment is a standing item. On all of our EXCO meetings, on all of our MINTOP meetings, the MINTOP meetings are the meetings between the ministry and the senior EXCO management within the department. We also, our minister has also, in all of our MINMEC meetings, in other words, in our meetings with our colleagues, MEC colleagues from the nine provinces, this is an item that we've also always put on the agenda constantly, so to say that we take it extremely seriously. In addition, our minister has been undertaking roadshows into our regions. We've got 11 regions in South Africa as the Department of Public Works and Property Management Trading Entity. And one of the things that we've discovered, which is missing, by the way, on slide 33, and this is not an excuse, but it's part of the reason why there is sometimes difficulties in paying, is that we discover also that some of our suppliers, or many of our suppliers, particularly the small ones, find it very difficult to comply effectively with the requirements when they put in accounts that we have to pay when we're billed. We find that they're difficult. So the roadshows have actually, the minister himself literally, has been running workshops with our senior staff to assist our many, many, many suppliers to ensure that when we are billed, the billing is effective and is compliant with what we are required to do. I should add also that the nature of our business, and I'm sure that the CFO and DG will make this point, the nature of our business also complicates payment. This is not an excuse, but part of the challenge that we face. And that is, when there's serious maintenance, for instance, refurbishment of a building is undertaken and so on, before we pay, we are quantity surveyors, structural engineers, and others need to sign off on the matter, in addition to requiring effective compliance from the service providers. So that adds a complication to meeting the 30-day requirement. It's not an excuse, and we've got to find ways to ensure that we do that. But just to highlight that. The colleagues will, when they make the presentation, will talk about essentially the 30-day payment issue. Is part of a broader, massive process underway in the Department of Public Works to turn around. It's no secret, and we were in the news for all the wrong... We're happy that we're largely out of the news currently, but in the last administration, it's no secret that we were in the news a great deal, okay? Partly for a particular building in your province, Chairperson. But that was not... That was actually the tip of the iceberg of many, many, many challenges, okay, in the Department of Public Works. There's also the whole Pretoria fiasco, the Rushabangu matters, and so on. So it was before Minister Nglesi came in the previous administration, midway into the previous administration, was a department which he described as being in serious trouble and was in the SIU. ICU. Well, in this case, both applied. And our minister brought in the SIU, well, in fact, discovered SIU reports, a voluminous one. So there's been a massive effort of turnaround, and I think that some of the not perfect record that is reflected in the report from the monitoring and evaluation colleagues indicate that although there's a significant, just in the quarter, October to December, very significant improvement in terms of meeting the 30-day requirement, but still a way to go. In terms of unpaid bills, we're still not improving, but the value of that is also static, so it's all a minor improvement. So even on that, even on this front, but on many other fronts, we think that and this is part of the turnaround, but just a small part of the general turnaround in the department, that we're at least seeing progress. We've a long way to go, we admit that. We think we're out of both the SIU and the ICU. Actually, there are some SIU matters, not as far as I know, attached to the 30-day thing, but we're pursuing those very actively. One of the turnaround issues is what we've introduced is what's called a government component, the property management trading entity. So it's a standalone entity, but without a board, you'll be pleased to hear, Chairperson, from your previous experience in an ad hoc committee. It's something that that government has introduced now. It's the idea that sometimes you need things which are not line departments, but have an agency capacity, if you like, but don't have all the complexities that often boards bring. We require boards in some cases for the obvious reasons, but in this case, what we've got is a property management trading entity. And that's the entity that seeks now to manage and run this huge, the largest property portfolio in South Africa. We're 7 times larger than Growthpoint, which is a listed private company on the JSE. So we've got this huge thing, but we were managing it as a bureaucracy, basically, as a thing. And what we're trying to do now is to professionalize what we're doing through the property management trading entity. And a key part of, obviously, professionalizing is to make sure that we get the 30 days payment thing right. So it's a newish entity, but that's what we're doing. If I could then just make one last point, and that is, in addition to the other, another very important reason why we need to look at getting 30 days payment right and correct is that it's also the gap through which corruption can occur. That wasn't mentioned by monitoring and evaluation, perhaps they were being polite, but there are cases where we are convinced that what is happening is that payment is being withheld. It's been signed off, basically, but it's being withheld in order to shake down the supplier and to say, you know, unless we get a cutback, you're not going to get it. So it's very, very important politically at the senior management level within PMTE and DPW and across government that there might be good reasons, as I've said, there might be good explanations for why there are delays in payment, but it needs to be a red flag because it could be that there's a shakedown coming from the side of government to say, we'll pay you, the money's there, but unless we get X amount of money, you're not going to get paid. And that's why I also appreciate what was said about victimization. We must really firmly commit. I was looking to see who had said the victimization. I suspect it's not one of our suppliers. The documentation indicates Kleidler Foundation, and I have a shrewd notion as to which department that might be related to. And it's not that they were saying they were getting, but we must certainly commit politically not to victimizing whistleblowers and people that raise the issue. It helps us to clean our act up if we get a sense that payment is being delayed because
that is often an indication either of incompetence on our part or worse than that, corruption. So thank you very, very much for the opportunity to come and present you. And we hope that that in 6 months' time or whatever, you'll call us back again, because I think let's see, let's monitor our progress and let's help each other to make progress in this matter. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Over to you, DG.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and honourable members of the committee. In the interest of time, we'll try and sketch through, because it's absolutely essential, in addition to what the Deputy Minister has said, for us to create the context in which things are happening and what is actually happening. And that is what we are going to be closing with, to indicate the actions that we have started implementing and those that we will be implementing, as a commitment to the committee to see improvement going forward. I will ask the CFO to take us through the presentation as briefly as possible, but just to indicate, our presentation will be covering both the DPW as a vote, as well as the PMTE, which deals with the property management related issues. That is where the technical issues are, which the DM has referred to, and indicate what we have done as part of our turnaround to fix the department has been done. It is a bit dicey that we saw actually ourselves that we were able to pick up a lot of invoices that with the manual systems we were having before, we were unable to see. I didn't have visibility of things until they are too late to be picked up. But now with the system we have implemented, which is an invoice tracking system, I'm able to see on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, what the status of the invoice payments are. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I had to chase some regional managers to say, I don't think that you are updating your information. As a result, the statistics are going to be negatively affected. And followed that with a stern warning to those affected people. And the CFO will take us through, and I would like him to concentrate on what we are doing at a later stage after sketching the context in which we are operating. With your permission, Chair.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Cox Mukoro. I'm the CFO for the Department of Public Works. I will try and gallop through the background information to what I'm going to be sharing with yourself so that we can then focus on the remedial action that you're putting in place to deal with the matter. Just by way of for context of how we operate. I think the Deputy Minister had alluded to this one, that we split the department into two, one being the main vote, which largely deals with the issue around policy and the monitoring and evaluation of the sector and the built environment, and then the property management trading entity, which then becomes the implementing arm of the department. Before, these functions were conflated into one. And the PMTE, just by way of a background, is a trading entity that was approved as part of the establishment way back in 2006. But ever since then, before we took a decision to operationalize, was not really doing much. In terms of the operations of the department, which is the main vote, we have a total allocation of about 6.5 billion rands, of which 5.6 is largely your transfers. So there's not really much in terms of a challenge with respect to that. And in addition to that, we've got about 500 million rands, which we spend on compensation of employees. In terms of administrative operations, we spend about 400 million rands on our goods and services. And that goods and services is largely around the following areas of our travel, of our cell phones, of our equipment that we utilize in office, and the motor vehicles that we use to operate. So
So that's really where the issues are with respect to the main vote. In terms of the PMTE on the other side, as I did say, that becomes the implementing arm of the department. And just to give a sense of what we're dealing with when you talk about the property management training entity, we're talking about an operation that's approximate about 18 billion rand in terms of spending, and I've indicated in the slide 8 there the areas where we actually spend money on facilities maintenance, which is 2 billion, on day-to-day maintenance, 2 billion, and the cleaning and gardening services, half a billion or just over half a billion, are construction projects, municipal services that we pay, and the leases that we get in terms of properties that we bring into the department to assist our client departments. So approximately, we're looking at total payments on a monthly basis of about 12,000 payments that we are doing on an ongoing basis. Then in terms of the nature of the operations, the technical nature of the operations, once the work is done, the work needs to be certified, and I think the Minister, DM, has also made alluded to that, is that this requires technical professional assessment to make sure that we are paying for work that was actually done. And this in itself is an extensive process with a multiplicity of role players. And I think the point that was made earlier on by the Honourable Chair, that at the end of the day, this is a value chain. There's a whole lot of other players in the process to actually get the payment done. The CFO could be at the end. There's line functions and distributed all over the country. And that's really what the challenge is with respect to the work that we are doing. Going back into the past, and we're still dealing with this matter, and because of the tight fiscal space that we are operating under, the ratio of projects to a project manager, that a project manager manages. One project manager would at any given point in time manage somewhere in the order of about 30 projects. That in itself creates a huge challenge with respect to the area that I indicated earlier on about certifying the work that has been done. We have 11 regional offices throughout the country, and unfortunately we do not have satellite offices. And these regional offices, they are situated in the main center, the provincial capitals of each and every one of the provinces, except for in Gauteng we've got two regional offices, one in Johannesburg and one in Pretoria. And in the Eastern Cape we've got one in PE and one in Mthatha. The rest is single offices that are catering for the entire geographic spread. Just by indication, I mean, if you are sitting in Kimberley where you have a regional office which services Upington, just thinking about the distances, it's quite a huge amount of distances that needs to be covered by a project manager or a works manager who must go certify the work. So that takes a little bit of time. I just wanted to just give a sense of that. And then in terms of our operations, I did give an indication of the extent of our portfolio. The extent of the portfolio is about 92,500 properties that need to be looked after, maintained on a regular basis, and that's the operation. And then I think that we've got to be also mindful, and I think the point was made earlier on the complexity of our SEM processes that are there, that we've got to comply with. I think it presupposes that, you know, we have a core of service providers and a core of officials to run this SEM process. I think we are still building this capacity as government, as administration, that we need to be able to operate the system fully. I think we've got even much additional issues with respect to this. We require extensive supporting documentation around issues of compliance, occupational health and safety, because we deal with buildings. The legislation with respect to treasury instructions that are there, and just the technical nature of the job. I mean, we require test tubes to test the strength of the concrete, all those kind of things, before you can actually do the actual payment. So this requires that kind of technical insight. The nature of our contract is very complex, just not a simple contract, depending on the work. You've got your JVCC, just very complex contracting methodologies. The technical validations prior to the invoice being certified requires time. And I think I need to mention the point that the way we've been tracking this thing is that as soon as an invoice arrives, we already log it onto the system and we start counting the dates from there, without even taking into account the processes of validation that requires to be made. And that could be another 60-day period, hence exacerbating the situation as has been reported.
And additional to this is that, you know, work happens, work gets done by the contractors. As soon as they get to an area to do some work, there's in no way a unilateral change of the scope by either the service provider or the client, because you realize that once you're doing this, there's something else that needs to be rectified, and they do it. And that in itself creates huge amounts of disputes that arise from that. In terms of the main vote, we have, in essence, we're looking at about the end of January, about 1,300 invoices that are unpaid. I'm just going to focus on that, amounting to 28 million rand, like I said. This, for us, is not a major challenge because it deals with the issues around our cell phone contracts, our operation practice, our travel, because these are arrangements that we've gotten in place with the service providers in terms of the certification and verification processes that needs to be undertaken. And lastly, mainly around our travel expenditure. So the issue around the main vote in terms of 30-day the compliance, we do not believe it's a major issue for us. I'll come to where the issue is, which is the property management trading entity. I'll then skip the slides that deal with the main vote, and or just maybe slide 18, just gives an indication of the aging of those invoices that are outstanding as at the end of January, which is the 840 invoices coming to 23 million rand, and that's the age of the invoices. Invoices that relate to prior, it's about 67, and that's how it goes. I think one other thing that we also need to mention, and I'll come to that when I deal with the PMT, is the extent of the accuracy of our information that we've been compiling to date. I will skip slides 19, 20, and just go into the data analytics for the property management training entity. Over the period since April, we've paid invoices within 30 days, about 109 invoices. Outside of 30 days, about 16,000 invoices, about 12% of those. We've got unpaid invoices, about 8,400, which is 7% of the total, and that unpaid invoices, once when we age it, the current portion of that is about 1,600 invoices, about 141, and the bulk of unpaid invoices sitting at 6,892 as at the end of January of 434 million rands, and we'll get into the detail of what makes up that. In terms of the context that I've tried to provide, if you look at the slide 22, there we are trying to give an indication of the nature of the work that we are doing, that we are providing, in terms of our day-to-day maintenance, in terms of our municipal services, and just the scale of the nature of invoices that we are getting. These slides on slide 22 deals with the invoices that are paid outside of 30 days. Of those invoices, a total of 16,529 invoices. Of that total, 11,362 was our day-to-day maintenance, and it's all the small works that gets done by our small contractors to change valves and do a whole lot of work that's on an emergency basis. That's the bulk of our challenge in terms of invoices that we are doing, paying. That's about 69% of the total. And this in itself, in terms of the unpaid invoices, it will also show that our day-to-day maintenance is our major challenge with respect to this. On slide 23, we are showing the unpaid invoices outside of 30 days. Again, of the 6,892 invoices, 3,743 are coming from our day-to-day, and again indicating that that's where the bulk of our activities are. We just gave a detail of the invoices that are outstanding as at the end of January, being 8,450 invoices, giving us a total of about 575 million rands in rent value. I will skip the graph and just show this, the aging of those invoices as they are, and it shows that the bulk of those invoices are actually sitting between, if you look at it, between from September up until January. There is some invoices that are sending way back to those areas. But if you go back to the time when we started to put a focused intervention on this area,
that we've reduced that significantly with what we are currently having. We had an engagement with colleagues from DPME and had a situation of what the situation was as at the end of August. At that time, then, we had somewhere in the order of about 21,000 invoices outstanding, of which 3,322 related to the prior year. We have since, as part of our cleanup operation, reduced the prior invoices outstanding as at the end of January to about 542 from that 3,322. In total, we've actually reduced unpaid invoices relating to old periods as part of the cleanup operation to about 2,638 as opposed to the 21,000 that I spoke about earlier on. So that's just an indication of the extent to which we have really started to focus attention on this matter as part of the cleaning up process, and we've achieved those kind of gains that I've indicated. I will then just look at the historical challenges. Where does this thing come from? I think the contribution of this thing is that, as I did indicate, we've been operating on manual Excel systems to capture the invoices that have been received. And like I said, the invoices were captured on the date when they are received and not at the time when the invoices are certified to be correct. The issues of dispute have not been taken into account to pull that outside of the invoices to start the tracking. So in a way, we are kind of over-inflicting the situation, if you look at it, if honorable members kind of get the point I'm trying to indicate. So there were no areas, no validation rules relating to data integrity. People are just capturing information and that was it. And then there was an inability to identify responsible officials causing the delay in the payment. I think that's where we are now with the new system that we have. We can identify an outstanding invoice to the individual. And that's the point that the video was making earlier on as to the rounds that we've been doing. The Excel spreadsheet can only be updated by one person at a time. So you've got this one thing that, you know, one person can update it. And hence, it started to question, you know, put into question the integrity of the information. And then the tracking of payments limited to information provided to registry. That's all we could use, just registry. Remember, the system that we are using and we are still using currently is our old legacy systems that have been there ever since, where we do not have the proper integrated financial management system for this complex business of our property management and construction activities. So that's what we are moving into. The invoices were not directly sent to registry by service providers. The project managers would hold on to the invoices provided to them directly by the service providers and only submitted to registry late for payment. I think that was another issue. And I think the minister, deputy minister, had made some kind of a mention of that, that you know, the official will hold the invoices with the view to not necessarily for bona fide reasons, but try and get something out of it, kind of thing, and we then have this kind of delays that we are experiencing. Then delays in the payment of invoices could not be adequately analyzed as a point of origin, which is the point at which they are registered and the time that they are certified for payment. And then the consolidation of regional inputs, like I said, we've got 11 regions that must service all the entire area, country. We couldn't do a proper consolidation of the regional inputs, which was very complex and time-consuming to try and do because of the manual systems that we are talking about. Historically, we had too many gates. That's one of the things that I've said, of entry of the invoices. People get them directly. They come to registry. There's all over. There was just a chaotic situation, and that's what we've now introduced, a central registry system that invoices are being submitted to, and that communication has been communicated to our suppliers, and now we know. And then there was no invoice tracking system. We have now put one together. We've set up a call center that operates all the time. People call, log their complaints on our call center. The automated invoice tracking system, as I said, is in place. We started rolling it out as from August of last year,
and we are starting to see the fruits of the system as it now operates currently. Then there was just this culture of non-compliance. I think the issue around historical issues around the department being, just a bit of underperformance and not correct things being done. Now, we've dealt with that issue. There's been ministerial roadshows, as we did indicate, to address staff on the matter and paying off invoices on time, and that we've actually made non-compliance with over officials as a matter of that the DG has got no tolerance over. The integrity of the information being tracked being a challenge. We've standardized the reporting throughout the department. One challenge was the submission of non-compliance invoices by suppliers. I think the roadshows that we alluded to and the help desk that we've set up has got a long way to assist over that. Then we've got long outstanding open orders as one of the previous challenges we had. We are proactively reviewing the purchase orders to ensure that there are no outstanding invoices that we need to be processing. In terms of the automated invoice tracking system, we call it the Rea Patela system. It's a management reporting system, and management can access the reports easily. The reports are online, real-time, and consolidated at all times. We've got escalation protocols built into the system as the invoice ages prior to the invoice reaching the 3-day period. There is a number of different reports that we extract from the system. One is the aging of the invoices per region, by the responsible person, expense type, and so on. We've got different reports that show the rejected or returned invoices and reasons thereto. The unpaid invoices within and outside 30 days, we can get the summary of such report. It reports on a monthly basis. We report to Treasury on the basis of the information that we collect from this system, like I said, which we rolled out as from August last year, and people are now becoming very much accustomed to the use of the system. The summary reports to the region, unpaid or paid, and whether it's within or outside 30 days, it's one of the reports we get, and the Rea Patela call center comments also captured on there to indicate what the issues are. And then this allows us to enhances our inverse capturing capabilities. It entrenches the responsibility for payment of suppliers across the department, tracking at each level to ensure effective payment processes by management. Tracking allows for effective consequence management. Now we are issuing the letters to the individuals who are shown on the reports to be the ones who are holding the reports, the payments. Identification of problem areas, the capacity and challenges and other challenges based on reliable data. At least now we can assess the situation using information that is there. Unlike before when we didn't have full sight of this of the extent of the problem. And then this will ultimately lead to improved payment of suppliers within 30 days. And like I said, if I've taken from the time that you've rolled out the system to today, we are showing significant improvement. And the numbers that are coming up is because of the efforts that we're putting in place to ensure that information is in the system now. No more are we having invoices that are outside of the system that you cannot track. And as you'll see, when you look at the months, a month of December, for instance, that's the month when invoices are submitted for payment by people. And these would be invoices that may not have been in the system before, and the providers of services would then arrive early in December to make sure that we can actually do the payments, and then the process of validation start happening there. Like I said, as part of the professionalization of the property management trading entity, we are rolling out an enterprise resource planning system, which is a system that is for the financial system integrated with all the different operating systems that we require. One of the operating systems that we need is a project management system. Why? Because we do a whole lot of work around construction, so you need that. Facilities management, very important. A portfolio of 92,500 structures and properties needs a system to manage it from a facilities management perspective. Lease management, we've got a portfolio of over 3,600 leases that we're doing. That's a daunting task. These things were done manually before. Now we are implementing an automation of the entire operation. The asset registry, I think we are aware that we have compiled an asset register and now we are utilizing it. Hence, we can talk with a fair level of confidence on the extent of the portfolio, and we can manage our budget appropriately. Central to the system is the financial management system that we are talking about, which is the Sage X3 system. And in this manner, we are going to do away with the automated invoice tracking system that we are utilizing based on what we are having. This information, we are going to be in a position to get direct from our systems by press of a button when we go forward. Of course, we'll be having a proper, you know, end-to-end system to deal with our issues. Other interventions, we've spoken about the ministerial roadshows, the payment of service providers, sustaining agenda item on our accountability, expo, mentor, all our governance structures. The CFO forum, which is a forum of CFO, myself, and the other CFOs from the provinces in the sector, we deliberate on this matter and we've got a sector profile of how we are doing in this area. The accruals project that we are currently doing, because one of our biggest areas is two areas, our regions, that we are dealing with in terms of the accruals and the day-to-day. Largely is our Pretoria Regional Office, because that's where most of our buildings are concentrated, as well as in Mabatu. In Mabatu, we believe it is an issue of information, the integrity of information, and I think processes, the DG has already started processes of disciplinary.
If you could move towards winding up, sir.
Yes. And then there are systems deployed in the Free State. We have assisted one of our offices, our provinces. The payment levels as well as unpaid invoices are submitted to Treasury on a monthly basis. And furthermore, we are having ongoing engagements with our colleagues from DPME and other departments on this matter. So all in all, Chair and honourable members, I believe we are on the right path as a department. We have done a deep diagnosis of our problem. We've put a system in place to help us track the thing. Over and above the system that you're talking about, we are rolling out, as from the 1st of April in the new year, a fully integrated enterprise resource system that will ensure that we integrate our financial information with our operating systems. And this will go a long way in terms of managing this challenge that we are faced with today. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, we do have similar challenges with the department, with Home Affairs, Water and Sanitation, Rural and Development, and I think we have to be consistent in our principle. And I think we are not going to be taking those today, because we have a similar department, unless there is somebody who is here that I probably don't know that he is a she or he is a DG or DG or a minister or deputy minister, because we really wanted to send a very strong message on this. We can't be moving around circles on this matter. Yes, sir, over there.
Thank you, Chair. No, I'm the acting DG for Department of Water and Sanitation.
Oh, okay. Yes, over to you, ma'am. Oh, thank you.
Chair, we agree. We agree to your stance. As you know, water affairs, for example, is crucial. And we want the political accounting officer like Minister or Deem here, and the DG or then an acting DG. But we support that No, we agree to that. You see, Chairperson, there are so many issues to raise, and one individual, you know, from the administration and the political, one can't answer it all. So I propose that even if a Wednesday is cabinet and a minister can't come, surely the committee may meet at another date if the minister can come only on another day. But we want the minister here to come and explain to us. She's not going to run away.
Because that would mean that this committee will never, because we meet on Wednesday, that means this committee will never have to engage with ministers. That's the implication of that. I don't know what is the feeling of the other members.
So just to indicate that Cabinet meets every second week and Cabinet committees meet on the alternative Wednesday.
Okay.
So, it should be possible.
Okay. So what is the view of the committee? I'm putting this matter to you, members. Honorable Ndobela, that we stand the water and sanitation together with all those other departments because they're not.
The political heads
are not here. Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, ma'am. I'm actually the acting DG Rural Development. We apologize also. We are at a portfolio committee on land at the moment where our ministers are. So that is why they are not here.
Yeah, can I get you members not to whisper to each other, Honorable Van der Vaart, please talk to me, through me. Yes, Honorable Soma.
No, Chair, don't be jealous, but we'll apologize for that, Chair. But I think we must be principled and consistent with all the departments. If the answer that we can get executive authority, let me use that word, probably we need to say, can we not get an authority to meet within the recess or whatever? Because my worry, Chair, if you leave it, which means then we're going to meet them towards the end of the year, and then damage would have been done, and because that's all I'm saying. Then if the minister is not here and we agree as a matter of principle the way we've dealt with the defense and the DG, I'm not referring to the actor, the DG is because she will still gonna come, but let's probably have a special day for that. Looking at your diaries in terms of what members and availability. That's what I'm suggesting, Chair, so that we can not waste our time.
Okay, Honorable Lissoma. I think the view of the members is that we are not going to we are not going to entertain those presentations. We will find a special day when we can meet with one of either the minister or the deputy must be present when we are engaging on this issue, because we really wanted to put a stop on this. We need these issues to be dealt with. So I'm sorry to those that are here from the various departments. Please do communicate that we definitely need the executive authority to be here as well, because these matters are so serious to a point where we can no longer tolerate just engaging with people who will go back, and we don't hold the executive accountable on this matter. We are trying to elevate this matter to demonstrate the gravity of this issue, that if it's not addressed, we will always be faced with the similar problems that we've been encountering previously. Members, there you are. We are now tackling the presentation of the planning performance monitoring and evaluation, as well as the report of public works. As the norm, I always come last. I always give you the opportunity to speak, to ask the questions. Okay. Honorable Mata.
Right, thank you very much. I'm in the fortunate position that I have the public works expert here in my corner, so I'll ask the. I must say the presenter. I didn't catch the last name.
Mukhoro.
That's right. I thought I had it right, but I was just one. Yeah. I just thought that I've always had this picture of public works as chaotic and stuff like that. And I think Deputy Minister Cronin, you know, touched on it earlier and what has been done. What I'm now getting is a sense of some cohesion and stuff like that. And in your presentation, you used the word professionalization several times, which I appreciate. My question is really this. In terms of all the interventions that you've done, and in terms of the issue that was raised by DPME, do you get a sense that the people who are responsible in this area understand really what this means in the bigger scheme of things? In other words, paying people on time, in time, is an important thing that is going to help us to do the things that, as we started indicating, the National Development Plan and running people out of business and stuff like that. I just want to hear from what you've done so far. Do you get a sense that there is some improvement? Are things getting better? Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Thomas.
We're not going to call me out of order. We're dealing with two presentations, DPME and the public works. Chair, in terms of DPME, one would like to understand their monitoring and evaluation and support, as it expected from where I'm sitting, that how much effort have you done to make sure that through your DG and the executive authority to bring to the notice of other departments the seriousness of this matter. Because we can quote the laws and everything, but there's nothing tangible, because there must be a good reason for DPME also to exist, and it must assert itself. It cannot only collate information and give us numbers, but and so what thereafter, what is your role? So I want to hear that, because if you look at the reasons that you have given us in terms of that it's a four-pager one table. The reasons at the end, most of them are more of an IT system that is aged, is not responding, and also the capacity. I don't want to talk about complexity, because probably you want to frighten us about complexity. There's nothing complex in terms of paying a person and putting the systems and manage those systems and monitor them. So I want to hear that, Chair. Secondly, probably let me be nice and also appreciate the presentation from both DPME and also the Honorable DM for his presence more than anything else, that we really welcome, which Chair, you have spoken to that, and also the presentation and also a willingness to move things. But my issue, Chair, which is my second issue, that politicians are here for five years, so we can't behave as if everything was starting from the scratch when we speak. Probably we must just be mindful when we change things, we don't change things, overhaul them in such a way that every 5 years was starting from the scratch. Because it poses a challenge, Chair, for from where I'm sitting. But also there is in terms of slide 21, just understanding the English, I don't know whether it's a technical English, the unpaid in brackets non-current, what does that mean? And there are figures there and the percentage, what does that mean for me, so that I can understand that one. The other one, Chair, that I would like to ask to from it's a discomfort. While I appreciate the reason of the property trading entity that has been created, because you are human capital, which I understand in some instances in public works also is more technical, because they must deal with the project management in all the technical role players that are involved to that project. The number of warm bodies which are there in the department and this entity, because it talks to the duplication of the work and the coexistence of the department, its relationship and the human capital budget, so to say, if you like, a bloated budget, HR bloated, operational budget, let me use that word. For me, I just want to get that understanding. But also, Chair, for me, with the progress that we have seen, looking at DPME report under Public Works, Honorable Chair, it talks about complexity, also issues of age IT system that is not on scratch. I want to know in terms of the IT, because it's more or less also the similar issue with defense, although we didn't deal with it generally in other departments, that who is actually the custodian of ensuring that the IT system is geared to the volumes and the expectation of the current dispensation, as it were, so that we can also then, as this committee, deal with that person, because which means then there is some disservice that is being done to other frontline service, as we do in terms of service delivery. The other one, Chair, okay, let me just stop there, but also in terms of your, the last one, in terms of your public work also, is there any clear, with all the challenges that Morolong you have said, Khorong, yes. At least I'm going there. I apologize. You're too, you're rolling, so I couldn't get it. But in terms of all the challenges that you have appreciated and mitigating factors that you have put in place, technically and otherwise, can we say that in 6 months' time, when you come back and see the progress in terms of the incapacity of your service providers, in terms of their paper tray and all that, with all the roadshows that we appreciate actually with the minister that is embarking on in terms of inducting the service providers, that there will be a sense of more improvement on that one? Because, of course, radical economic transformation cannot be radical if there's nothing radical that it happens. But also, we mustn't pronounce ourselves, and through you, sir, Chair, to DM. We must be careful when we use all the laws. As this current, from 1994, this government came up with all these laws and the monitoring systems and the regulations and all that, and when then we fail to deliver and we make those corporate governance compliance and regulatory compliance as this hindering, which are not necessarily, is to make sure that there's compliance and accountability and all those things, because I had that sense of down chair before.
All right. Thank you very much, Honorable Soma. I was going to stop you because I'm also watching time because we still have another presentation and I have to go to the chairperson's meeting at quarter to one. And I do want to hear the responses from the Public Works as well as the PME. Yes.
So, we are going to be given a chance, ma'am. I'm going to take
all the questions from the members so that we can give you the chance to respond. If you can just jot down your responses down. Thank you.
Yes, Honourable. Chair, I'll be very brief. I'll put my questions to PME. My first question would be that, we are talking about service providers, we're talking about the whole situation with the economy, and therefore the laws that we made and agreed to is to pay people within 30 days. Now, in the monitoring situation, how is it possible that some of the reasons coming from various departments are still that there are problems with the invoices? Surely there must be a simple system in place that in any department, any municipality, wherever, that if you submit the invoice, it can be checked that it's correct. So it cannot be a reason at the end that the invoice lacked whatever information was incorrect. The other issue to them as well, and how do we make sure that, in my view, municipalities are service providers too? Because we buy our electricity and our water, whatever, but they are not paid within 30 days. Now, if ever you want a very good oversight, nagging MP in your neck, that's me. I will tell you what the maintenance of the buildings are in Public Works, and I will tell you you're not paying your bills. So what are we doing to ensure that we pay our municipalities as well on time? Because, Chair, the result of not paying that is we now are starting to see hospitals and schools, electricity being cut. That is basically our essential services. They're going to be cut. And I must, unfortunately, to the Deputy Minister, who I appreciate his attendance as well, is Public Works is a huge culprit in this, not paying municipalities on time. So are we saying to PME and to Public Works, if I bring you those bills, you'll make sure they get paid within 30 days? Because if you don't pay the municipality, electricity will be cut, businesses won't be able to do business, our people on the ground won't get water, etc., and the whole economy goes. There's a huge chain reaction if you don't pay your municipal bills. And I'm doing a plea that gets urgent attention.
Thank you. Is there any other member who wants to come in?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I think Honorable Van der Vaart has represented me very well. That's the advantage of sitting at the end of the line. Chairperson, I have only one or two questions to the Public Works Department. There are times when services are rendered without an order. I wish I could get some more explanation to that, because it does cause a delay in the payment, according to the report. How does this, how are the services rendered without an order? What is exactly happening there? And one of the reasons for the delay is the complex business processes. What are the complex business processes, and why are they not, why is it not possible to loosen those complex business processes so that we do not have the problem that we're experiencing? And then with regard to the Riapatala system of payment, actually, I didn't hear which provinces has it been established, and why are other provinces back? And how long does it take to implement this this kind of a system? And then can I continue, Chair, with the TPME?
Yes, I mean the trending
round that you got is for both.
Oh, okay.
If you don't take it, then it's gone.
Wow. thank you, Chairperson. To DPME, are there any consequences for officials not adhering to the provisions of the legislative prescripts of the 30-day payments? And where there are any written warnings, where were there any written warnings to such officials? And how many officials did departments discipline? That is, those who fail to adhere to this principle. And my next question, Chair, to DPME, is how many service providers have taken government departments to court as a result of payment of invoices? And how much did government incur on the litigation?
Okay.
Yes, Honourable Member. Sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. Apologies for being late to this meeting. There's a terrible accident on the road. I've got one question.
Yeah, don't worry. I also had the same problem. I left at 10 to 7 and I only got here 20 past 9.
Sure. I'm not sure if it's been covered in the presentations, but I'm going to ask it anyways. There's a common problem, and we've seen it with human settlements in particular, where work is tendered for. The person who gets the tender then outsources that work because they didn't have the capacity to do it themselves in the first place. And that's a separate issue. They do get paid, but they don't pay the people that actually did the work. We've seen it in Nelson Mandela Bay, for example. There's a very well-publicized case with houses that were built there, and we've seen it across the board, in fact, and it has left many companies, legitimate companies, destitute. It has left families destitute, and it's a massive problem with those that are getting. So there's a separate problem with regards to how the tendering is taking place and being awarded. That's a separate problem entirely. My question really is that how is government then shielded? Because a lot of these individuals have then taken government to court because they say they did their work for government even though it was outsourced to them. How is government shielded, and can government ensure, or different departments ensure, that the people who had actually done the work are actually getting paid? Is there a way that is included in contracts that are being done with suppliers and with service providers, etc.?
Thank you. Honourable Members, very quickly from my side, and I'm going to give the Deputy Minister a chance as well to respond to some of the questions, 5 minutes, and I will also give Honourable Deputy Minister Dlodlo to respond to some of the questions as well, 5 minutes as well, then before I can go to the officials to respond. Members, One of the things that is really bothering me, and that is arising out of the presentation that we got from the planning monitoring and performance monitoring and evaluation presentation, as well as public works, and the current challenges that we face as a state to deliver. You know, if you look at the numbers that we are given, you've told us that only 40 departments. I'm not sure if that figure only is only about national departments or it also includes provinces, but 40 to me is a very significant number. If you take into account that the entities and everybody else that are actually, you know, that are getting a very clean audit when it comes to adhering with this policy. Now, this brings me to the question, which is a policy question. Probably it also borders on a policy question. Whether the planning, monitoring, and evaluation has ever taken, since its inception, has ever taken a statewide audit on the capacity of the state to deliver services before we can even talk about even the invoices. Because it looks like we are shooting in the dark. You try to solve this problem, the other one comes up. It's like a wave. It's like an avalanche. And unless we know what we are dealing with, and my own background is more on quality management systems, where you need to know the cause and the effect. Because basically what it looks like now is like we are dealing with the effect and not necessarily with the root cause. And I just want to know whether such has ever taken place and why it has not taken place, so that when we are dealing with the issues, we know whether we are dealing with the cause or we are dealing with the effect. Because currently, it doesn't seem like we know what we are dealing with. We seem to be browsing through the issues. And the other thing I also wanted to know about whether we have a standardized formatting of the various services that we render. Let me give you an example why I'm saying so. You know, if you are looking at public works, and Minister, I'm actually looking at you on Deputy Minister Cronin, you know, public works is a very strategic department from the point of view that says that department, if it does its job well, it could actually stimulate economic activity and growth. And therefore, to me, there is a question that always lingers. Why is it that, because we are sitting with this number of invoices, hence I'm talking about the root cause and the effect, we are sitting with these large numbers of invoices that are not paid on time, but maybe that problem shouldn't be there. Why are we leasing buildings, government buildings? Because government, as politicians, we come and go, the buildings will stay there forever. And again, once you are there, because to me, the cost of having to service the lease and whatnot, and looking at that, and the corruption that is involved in that whole chain, to me, just says to me, something is wrong with us. We are a developmental state. We have a very wide gap between rich and poor, and we have a high rate of unemployment rate. We are not, Tina, we can't adopt all the Mandel, Fleming, you know, all those economic models. We can't, simply because our unemployment figures are not one-digit figures. That, you know, when they make those assumptions, they base them on, you know, your singular digit unemployment figures. In South Africa, I mean, we've even like embraced something that to me is not good, where we say, oh, you've stopped looking for employment. Oh, well, we're no longer going to count. You're no longer human enough.
You know, it's and somehow we don't even factor you in because we are trying to manipulate figures so that, you know, they fit in with you know, lower figures of unemployment when they are actually sitting at over 40%. Now, does it make sense that we are leasing these buildings instead of getting these buildings and employing these people? I'm talking within the context of this wide, you know, income gaps in South Africa. Because when we are outsourcing this thing, you must remember that even these contractors that we are talking about, by the time this money gets to them, when they have to pay that, those that have worked, those people that have worked, they get, I mean, peanuts. Nothing. I mean, and they have no rights most of the time, especially in the construction sector. I'm talking about, yes, I'm not saying that we must physically build the buildings, but I'm talking at the point of ownership. My question is around the leasing. Why are we not owning this? Because with the schools, I want us to approach the same thing. With a school, you can't lease a school because you know that it's going to be there. That's the assumption. Why, when it comes to government buildings, we are using a different assumption from the school and the hospital. And to me, I'm raising this within the context of invoices because that's another way of reducing these invoices. In the first instance, if we have this agency that you are talking about, this management portfolio, property management portfolio, running its work well, we are not going to be sitting with this embarrassment because public works, whether we like it or not, it is contributing to inner city decay. It is contributing to inner city decay. You have buildings that are sitting there that are not maintained. They have rats and whatnot. And, you know, they bring the property values down. Public works is actually central to the economic activity or the economic livelihood of any city or town. And that is why I'm going to be very harsh with you. I am appreciating the progress that you are making, but there are fundamental policy issues, which is why we've been insisting that we need political heads to come before us. Because some of these problems are not just about, you know, the invoices not being processed, but some of them are about the amount of invoices that we have accumulated because of the policy decisions that we have made that are not making sense in our own environment, and it does not speak to our own economic conditions. And I agree with Honorable Van der Vaart on the consequence on the municipalities, and I'm becoming almost like a scratch record, and probably because I have been in the municipality, and I can tell you, as long as DPME, you are not going to give us a sense, because we want you to come back to us and actually give us a detailed report on in different municipal-based report on the amount owing by public works. Because we can't just be talking about 30 days policy at a vacuum. Some of these municipalities, by the way, in rural municipalities, the only source of revenue is the property rates that public workers ought to be paying. It's the services that public workers ought to be paying for. Now, we need to zoom into that. Because unless we get to the bottom of this, the root cause of the problem, we're not going anywhere. And again, it's you, ma'am. I really, really, and again, I do understand your point, but the reason why we also want ministers here, and we are not mincing our ways about that, is because we really wanted to hold them accountable. Now, I need to be asking you whether there are consequences for the late payment, either on the side of the department or from the perspective of the one that is being defaulted. The normal consequence when you are not paying your account on time with any other, in any normal business dealing, is that I have the right to charge you interest.
And why should the government be exempted from that? I'm talking from the supplier perspective, from the service provider perspective. The service provider has given you a service and has particular legitimate expectations, and because you have not paid this person, SARS, by the way, is already billing this person based on the invoices that he has already issued. And you have taken loans, SARS is charging the interest. But this particular service provider is still going to be paid the same amount of money that they billed you for 10 months ago. During that time, the rent has fluctuated, all sorts of things have happened, and if we are talking about that Gauteng experience where they are importing some of the technology or whatever, or the equipment and so forth, what happens in a case where the person had, you know, at the time when they were, when they issued you, the price was down. Now they need to, by the time you are paying them, maybe the rent has fluctuated further down, which means that they now need more money than the money that you are going to give them. That way they're not going to be able to pay for their service, for their workers, and before you know it, the company, you know, closes down. Is this what we wanted to achieve, members? I mean, honestly, it's just something that I think it's, which is why I am saying we actually need the ministers here, because these consequences, we need to have a proper consequence management and say this is the consequence that happens. There is another thing that the honourable minister said, which is also something that is a serious sore spot: the victimisation of suppliers or service providers for complaining. And these things go deeper than just, you know, complaining. Sometimes the service provider is being victimized simply because they are refusing to give you a cut. What are we doing to monitor that? What are we doing to ensure that those who are where can a service provider go and say, I have a problem, I have not been paid because this so-and-so wants a cut, but I do not want it to lose my job, but they don't get victimized in the process, that they are defined out. What mechanisms do we have to protect these people? Because if we don't deal with that root cause of the problem, we are actually going to have with the state of paralysis. Because what's going to happen is that this one who is being defaulted is going to be forced to participate unwillingly in the corruption chain, not because they want to, simply because they want to survive. And given our economic environment, really, when you said that there was one supplier or the service provider who said, I don't want to be known, but I complain, I actually got a shiver on my spine, because we needed to have a way of dealing with this. But finally, which is something that is also going to be going to the minister, is that how do we, Minister Jojo, how do we strengthen this new special unit in DPME, and how best can we deal with the issues of technology? Because the issues of technology, is there a plan to deal with the issues of technology? Because the technological factor as an issue of causing most of these suppliers not being paid on time, and the fact that the risks that are associated with the manual, the things that were cited by Public Works, by the way, are the same with defense. They are the same everywhere. The whole system, have we been engaging with CETA as DPSA? You know? Have we been engaging with DPSA? And can DPSA give us an indication of the state of our own IT infrastructure? Have we done an audit since, I mean, we've moved it so rapidly from the typewriter generation to this generation, and it moves every day. The IT environment is a rapidly changing one, and it scares me if we don't address it, because it's not only about the manipulation of that. There is another point that can happen. If you don't have a good system, it's susceptible to being hacked, which means that you may get, you know, other invoices in the system. You might actually end up being double billed and paying twice. There is all sort of risk factors, given the fact that our revenue base in South Africa is so low. Why are we not looking after the resources, that the little resources that we have? Because to me, if we are not going to be embracing the technological advancement, obviously, that means the very little money that we are paying. And you must remember, we do not, these taxpayers of South Africa, especially your high-earning individuals, we have to keep them happy. And it's them that are complaining in the papers, by the way. And by the way, they are the ones that are contributing significantly to our revenue, because in South Africa, if you look in the 1970s, your corporate income tax was higher than the individual income tax. Today, it's the opposite. So the individuals that are paying, you can't just treat this thing as people who are just a nuisance, making noise, you know, and that kind of thing. Because at the end of the day, they are the ones that are actually contributing to the tax base so that we can deliver the services that we need to deliver. And I'm sorry that I've taken long, but it's very, very important that these things are dealt with. And finally, to you, Minister, Deputy Minister, is there a plan in place to actually reconfigure public works in a way that, you know, currently the way we are working in South Africa, we don't seem to be moving with times. Whether you are looking at the architectural structures that we have, or you look at whatever, if you look, one thing that colonial powers did very well, by the way, when they invested in government buildings, whether you hate or like them, they made sure that it exudes, you know, durability, that even in future it's going to be here. I mean, if you look at all the colonial buildings, that's the kind of building infrastructure that you have. Now, has there been a thinking around the reconfiguration where we are creating government one-stop shop for government? Obviously, it's got to be a long-term plan, but it's got to start somewhere. Like where we are saying, because you are public works and you have a strategic place, a strategic role to play, which is economic, but you also have the strategic role to play in terms of reconfiguring these things, so that even when we are talking about these, when we are talking about 30-day deposit or whatever, and we have best practices like the one that you were citing, ma'am, of those 40 departments. There is a mold of government, if you like, for a lack of a better word. You know, you have mold of government. That way, the other department that is not doing right is going to be able to just walk across and simply go and say, no, go across. Those people are doing it right. Why are you getting it wrong? Just across, you know, opposite your office or something like that, you know? Something to that effect. Because we need to be moving with times. And unless we change our own mindset as an instrument, as a center of the economic activity, you can see that all the streets where you had all these streets with all these old shops and whatnot, eventually they will go away, because this is the way we are going, we are moving as a country in terms of development and the physical infrastructure. And this thing speaks into the turnaround time as well, in terms of processing our own invoices, and in terms of reducing the number of invoices that we have. And these are long term. Thank you very much. And I'm going to give you Honorable Conin a chance to respond, and then I will give Honorable George, or then I'm going to get the officials to respond before we move quickly to the officials, and then the CPSA.
Thank you very much, Chair, and also thanks to the honourable members of the committee for, I think, useful and interesting questions. The I say this with respect, Chairperson. First of all, I really like the direction, strategic direction that you're taking in asking us a series of questions. The unfortunately, if you were a member of the or chairing the Portfolio Committee of Public Works, then you would have known that we get very extensive responses. Yesterday, we were reporting on our APPs for both the property management trading entity as well as for the Advanced Public Works. 2 weeks previously, we were reporting on what you're referring to nicely as public sector shopping malls, quote unquote. We were reporting on our strategic plans and engagements with small municipalities as well as City of Pretoria and to some extent Cape Town City on precinct development and how we use their but also our public buildings to develop precincts which are user-friendly, accessible, well looked after and so forth. So there's much of what you're raising, which I'm very tempted to go on in length, but I would suspect there's a mandate creep going on, whether it's yours or mine, I'm not sure, because this is precisely the strategic area that I think is music to our ears. It's exactly because we do think that public works, which also often been seen as the Cinderella of government, actually has a very important facilitating and developmental role. And so I'm very happy you're raising the questions. I'm not going to have time to answer most of them or any of them in any kind of detail. But thank you for raising those issues.
That's fine, Minister. We must rest assured. I just wanted you to know that that's what
we want you to do. As well.
But we are not really expecting data answers, and we knew that we are getting into the public space as well.
Well, but it's a broader space. I've chaired a committee for 10 years here in Parliament, and it was quite frustrating because it's very hard to have a discussion about one thing that doesn't connect up with other portfolio committees and so on. So I appreciate what you were doing. I mean, just very briefly to say that certainly our plans are to significantly develop our public sector holdings of property and to move away from the leasing in space. We may well lease out because there are often buildings which are well located, some of them elsewhere, which can be then a revenue stream for the government, which would enable us then to better fund the maintenance and so forth of our property. So that is all of the strategic thinking that is happening.
No, I am. I
get so frustrated when my ministers come here and We just sound like a bunch of lunatics, when we are saying these things. So when a minister is saying something that you think, hey, we share the same perspective, you will sound so excited. I'm sorry about that.
No,
it's like
right.
I'm at church now.
No, that's good. I couldn't comment on that. But maybe we're just lunatics together. But anyway, that's good. We are saying. So, a huge problem. So I'm still talking general and not about the invoices and the 30 days. A huge historic problem, which was inherited, was that we didn't know what our property portfolio was. We didn't know. And I think what we finally completed, it's never absolutely completed because it's a moving target, but we've now got a complete immovable asset register. That thing's very complicated because you talked about colonial governments. One of the things the colonial governments did was also create divided rural buildings and structures. Okay, and so when we came in 1994 as the new democratic government, who owned what? There were now nine provinces. There were former Bantustans. So the whole immovable asset issue was a deep, deep mess. And I must say that, again, so part of our big turnaround has been to consolidate our immovable asset register so we know strategically what we've got, which we didn't have. But it's also been a very complicated process of also what's called vesting. In other words, some of it actually belongs to provinces, some of it belongs to education department or rural development and land reform and so on. So that's been, but if you don't have a map of where you are, it's very hard to have any kind of precinct development, strategic plans and so on. So a lot of our initial effort around turnaround is just to get a proper immovable asset register. The next step, which we're busy with, is then we didn't know what the value. So they were valued at 1 rand, basically, just nominally. So now, because of the property management trading entity, one of the things is it has a different form of accounting, which has to take into account, and accruals and so forth. And so it's part of the professionalization we're talking about also then involves getting a better sense, not just of, what it is that we are the custodians for, but its value as well. Those are some of the things a little bit as it were motivated by your broad thing. Thanks for the Honourable Madam who said that he got his impression of the Department of Public Works because you probably live in Acacia Park. Yeah, you can actually. Through your committee representative, your village committee representative. Okay. So be careful what you say. We're also your landlords, right? So but we know that we frustrate you a lot, and we apologise for that, and we are doing our best. But thank you, Honourable Madoff, for saying that the impression from the input, and I hope it's not just spin doctoring, that we think there is a significant turnaround underway. We do believe that, and it's not just us saying it. So the AG certainly, Scopa that we go before quite regularly, are all indicating a sense, and even in the public media, from time to time there's a scandal, but overwhelmingly in the media also what we're getting is a sense of improvement, and the portfolio committee to which we report, including the DA and other representatives there, will always say we're really angry with this or that, but we concede that. So in our budget debates and so forth, there's been an acknowledgement which we welcome, but we also welcome criticism, because we know we need it, and we need to be kept on the toes. We don't have a problem with that. It's exactly right. Then, if I could just address some of the other issues, the question was a correct warning that we must be very careful of politicians coming in and starting a whole new to put their mark, to cut the new ribbon and not look after the maintenance of the road, but to launch the new road or the new building or whatever, and so on. So, I think that's good advice. Just to say, slightly, I suppose seriously, that Minister Mwesi and I do not necessarily expect to be around for 5 years even, okay? So we are very mindful, and we say this very firmly to the senior management in our department. We say this very firmly to our thing, is that what we need to bed down are systems, which Cox Mahora was talking about, systems and structures which are not about us, but set in place for the long haul, durability, developmental capacity and so on. It's not about us at all. Just to address that. Then there was the issue about duplication. Okay, we've got now a property management trading entity as well as the Department of Public Works. And that is something that clearly needs to be looked at. We think that there is no... Basically what's happened is that the majority of the people who are currently in the property management trading entity, except at the higher level, had been part of the staff of the Department of Public Works. So they've shifted across. But at the same time, we want to professionalize what we've got in property management trading entities, particularly at the senior management level, but increasingly now as we recruit into the property management trading entity, we need administrators, of course, but we want engineers, architects, quantity surveyors, property management, estate agent managers, and so forth, people with project management capacity and so on. So, rather than having too many warm bodies, the problem is that we haven't got enough, actually. And so that figure of the average in our department and PMTE of project-to-project manager is some 30 projects. If you go to the Old Mutual and ask them, I think it's about 3 or 4, if it's maximum size. So it's a challenge, which is partly a challenge of getting the people with the professional requirements. So the point is well taken. We think we don't think we're bloated. We think that we have, but we do need to be careful that you don't bloat with administrators and understaff in terms of professionalization.
But your department is also going to be labor intensive by its own very nature.
the so the Department of Public Works with what's described as the main boat, the property management trading entity, will be professional intensive, not so much labor intensive. Okay, if you get the difference.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
we will still
yeah.
depend quite considerably on jobs that we create, but through service providers of one
yeah.
kind or another. Okay, although even that we are trying to. So we're also trying to increase. Obviously, another major stream, and this is off topic here.
Mm.
I mean,
mm.
our major contribution is we're the national coordinating department for the expanded public works program.
Mm.
So your thing about the expanded definition of the real unemployment
mm.
is exactly right, and that's the key target that we have in helping to coordinate the whole of government around the expanded public works program. So that's a whole different matter. We hope we didn't get the impression when we mentioned the complexity of laws and regulations that we need to follow, that we're not saying they're a problem and we must get around them. Clearly, if you're dealing with major maintenance or construction of buildings, then occupation, health and safety regulations and laws are incredibly important. The Construction Industry Development Board, the CIDB, which grades professionals in the built environment operations and so on, very important that we make sure that so that we don't get what one honourable member referred to, where you contract with people who don't have the capacity and then they subcontract and don't pay, they get the money and so on. And part of that is to make sure that the CIDB grading in the case of a construction or a major maintenance is appropriate with the partner that you're dealing with. And that you don't contract to someone who's got, you know, call themselves Fulandela or Amandla or something like that, but actually, don't have the professional. You want to promote those who call themselves that, not because they call themselves that, but because you want to promote small black enterprises, as you probably correctly started at the beginning. But we do need to make sure that there's compliance, not just with narrow invoicing requirements, but and obviously then on the completion of work, we also do have to bring in quantity surveyors, engineers, structural engineers and so forth, to make sure that what we're paying for is what the public is getting and what the public is getting. And that does add complexity to the invoicing system. On municipalities, thank you for raising that. That's a whole very strong work stream that we've got going and significant progress. So if we've been asked to report on that, not sure if this is the right committee to ask us, but why not? We would have been able to give a report which indicates significant improvement, but also some of the many challenges: municipalities that don't have the ability to invoice effectively, municipalities that can't get their rating systems right, and so on. And obviously, it's typically the municipalities, as I think someone said, that desperately need rates to be paid by the public sector, but often can't. So again, we've done roadshows with municipalities and so on to also ensure that there's effective, that they can build properly, that we can pay effectively and not run into the Auditor General, who will say you've paid for something, but where's the evidence of what's been done and so on. But we can give a report, and we're very active on that space as well. I think that I'm sure there are other issues which are not answered.
I think we've raised a lot of issues, and what I would suggest is that we get written responses from on the questions that we asked, because unfortunately we don't have sufficient time. I also am keen to give the Deputy Minister Dlodlo an opportunity to react, and the rest of the questions, if you can respond to us in writing. How much time are we giving them to respond in writing on our questions? Pardon?
30 days, we want.
7 days. No, 30 days. No, it's 7 working days.
Yeah, we can get
so, yeah, 7 working days. That is fine. Honorable Dlodlo. By the way, we wanted to thank you for having me. I know Honorable Cronin was saying, no, don't thank us for coming. You know, the thing is, if we wanted to enter a particular culture where ministers understand that they have to come and account to this committee, those that are doing right must not be painted with the same brush with those that are not doing right. So it is within that context that we appreciate your presence. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm not sure if we shouldn't wait for the presentation from the CPSI because it deals with possible solutions to the issues that you're dealing with here.
No problem.
But also, on the efficiencies and effectiveness of ICT systems in government, I had a meeting this morning with the CPSI. We have systems that do not speak to one another. Unfortunately, I cannot today speak with authority on the matter because CETA no longer falls under us. But our responsibility as a department is e-government. We set the tone on the type of systems. We are supposed to be setting the tone on the type of systems we're supposed to buy. But that's a story for another day, Chairperson, because we have been without a GCIO for a very long time. Now, if we're responsible for e-services, in government, it becomes difficult for us to regulate that space in the absence of a government chief information officer. Because if you have people acting all the time, you at some point you will have people acting who have really become tired of acting. Mm. And they're not going to bring anything new, they're not going to, that they'll be dragging their feet. So I think the sooner we look into this matter as a department to appoint a GCIO and bring in someone with energy, not someone who was hired by IBM in the 60s when I was born. In the 60s when I was born, but someone that has energy of today's environment who would be able to inject that type of energy in the system. Mm. And I'm not saying this to say people who are a little older cannot bring fresh ideas, because they can. But, you know, we just need people that are really going to be moving very quickly on this one, because we get overtaken by events. By the time we decide on a particular technology, technology has changed. So I think the sooner we look into the appointment of a new GCIO in the department, the better, so that they can start working together with CETA and other departments. But also for my part, the most important thing is as well is the consolidation of information in the public service, which I spoke to the team about this morning as well today, because if you have information sitting in disparate corners, unconsolidated, How sure are we that the firewalls or the security systems are secure enough that my information is not compromised? We have different systems that hold information about all of us. What is the central repository? Who manages it? And how secure is that repository of that information? I'm just leaving it like that. Because then what that would mean is that probably at a cabinet level, an audit of ICTs would have to be presented, and from there decisions should be taken as to how we phase out legacy systems that are no longer working, but also look at systems that can be integrated for greater efficiency, but also for better management from a security perspective.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. I honestly do think that we need to be following up on monitoring the appointment of the GCIO.
I mean, we can't be in 2017 and we are not prioritizing that. It's actually scary. And it goes back to the things that, I mean, we are experiencing with other departments. I mean, most departments, they would tell you whenever you're asking them why they have not been able to pay these invoices, it boils down to their systems as well as a major part of why they are not able to meet these obligations. Without further ado, can I ask Ms. Hadebe if you can come in and present? But thank you very much, and please do respond to our questions in writing. We look forward to engaging with you, and we expect a report, by the way, from Public Works Minister in 6 months' time. We've heard beautiful stories that you are telling us about. We want to see the progress after 6 months, eh?
Yeah.
That's what accountability is all about. Whether you are here or not here, Minister, by that time, we want you to come back and account. Because you made that undertaking. Okay, sure. Thank you. Yes.
Just before I honor my next appointment through your permission.
Yes.
I just want to take from what the GM has just said now.
Attention to my members.
Yes, I'm just taking off from what the DM has just said now from DPSA that in order to close some gaps with regard to our development in technology, you need to have a young and energetic. I just wanted to say, I think that is the mistake that we are doing. That creates the gaps that we have as far as technology is concerned, because we tend to ignore the elderly ones, which have over the years developed the crystallized intelligence, and that you don't find in the young ones. I think that's where the problem lies. So the crystallized intelligence is with the elderly ones. You'll never get it. So that creates a gap. As far as technology is concerned.
You know, you are reminding me of something that we fought over when I was still in local government, when I was the CEO of SALCA. You know, we have a lot of people with PhDs in town planning, but they acquired those degrees when we still had separate development. And whether their degrees are still relevant and whether they still need to be called the doctors or something like that, because we have integrated development now. And maybe that is why we have the development of cities, of low-cost housing far away from economic activity centers. That's because of your generation, anyway. We are not excused, Honorable Ndombe.
We also changed on planning development after many moves and tonight we did change all those planning rules and laws, and you didn't do it. Okay, Ms.
Hadebe,
over to you.
Chairperson, can I please apologize that when I mentioned IBM, it was not because I had no confidence in that company.
I don't want to be
misquoted to say that I have. Yeah, I'm scared of her.
We understood it. And Father Paz, you understood that too.
I'm going to go to blame on this one.
Okay. Over to you, ma'am. If it is possible for you to do it within the next 10 minutes.
Yes, I will. Thank you, okay. Chair. Honorable Chair. Honorable members, thank you. The request to the CPSI was to present on new projects. and this is what we're presenting on. But we thought we should just start by saying very briefly that this is all underpinned, the program is underpinned by the NDP's vision of building a capable and developmental state, and those are some of the outcomes that we are addressing right now. Quite basic education, health access, crime reduction. But that's not to say we are not looking into or we're not working on the other outcomes as well. And just to touch very briefly on the value proposition of the organization, we leverage innovation, and when we say innovation, both ICT and non-ICT, to unlock service delivery challenges. And just to say that where government institutions have very good strategies and policies and frameworks and templates in place, but they still have service delivery challenges, that's where innovation comes in, to get them to just push their boundaries and challenge their status quo and find ways to address their challenges. We leverage gains that are made in the science and technology field, which is within the National System of Innovation, driven by the Department of Science and Technology, for the benefit of the citizens. We harness strategic partnerships with various sectors of our community, the private sector, for their very good innovations, but also we partner with them so that we use their funding towards testing and piloting of new innovations, because there's the risk element which the PFMA is not comfortable with. And obviously we try and provide a risk-friendly environment for testing and piloting of various prototypes. We create an enabling environment for public sector innovation to thrive. We have various products and platforms that we have put in place, and we continue to nurture to ensure that there's conversations, ongoing conversations on public sector innovation. We have a multimedia, a physical multimedia innovation center in Pretoria that we would like the members actually to come and visit. We unearth and implement innovations for replication and scaling up. So we find already existing innovations that we take to different localities. And just to note at this point, that when we take them to new localities, whether it's new sectors or new provinces or departments, they become new projects because of the different dynamics within those contexts. And we also champion regional and international thought leadership on public sector innovation. In terms of the new projects, again, we need to just point out that the departments are approached. The departments approach the CPSI when they have these challenges. They bring their challenges to the CPSI, and we work with them towards finding solutions. And that is really good for ownership. But we also approach departments when we pick up challenges that are in the media, or we get directives from our political principals, from be it the minister or the portfolio committee themselves. We then embark on those projects. But just to say that initiating a project is always very lengthy and complex because of the dynamics within each institution or within each sector. Now, just to take you through some of our new projects, the first one we're talking to is the front office optimization of Home Affairs. They approached us with this one. They struggle to get to track performance at their front offices around the country, and they've asked us to help them come up with a management and reporting tool, and well, that is their new project. The DTI apparently has more than 60 public entities reporting to the department, and they've also approached us to help them come up with a web-based in-house application that will help them track performance of all the entities that report to them. And when we come to the health sector, there's a number of projects, but we think we must just explain why so much focus on health. It's because of the numerous requests that we receive from that sector, specifically from hospitals at the coalface of service delivery, because of the number of very good award entries we receive every year, and because of the challenge of queues that comes up, you know, all the time. Just to say that the root causes of those queues are not the same in all institutions. You can come up with a queue management framework or a system, but the queues persist. And that is because there are challenges in the back office. And that is what we're working on. So, and the hospitals are just one sector where the problem of challenges has been identified. Now, once we decided to go the route of health sector specific focus, we started with workshops. We've run workshops in 5 provinces for 163 hospital CEOs. After a number of engagements, we found that the CEOs are the people that are most frustrated and that are desperate to sort things out at their level and at the hospital level. So that's why we're working with CEOs, and we're seeing a lot of gratification. So 163 of them around, in a number of, and in Gauteng alone, this has resulted in a number of projects in different hospitals, Better Goa, Chris Hani Baragwanath, Far East Randall, Ratong, and Kondisa. And we are obviously working with the UNDP and GEMS who are supporting sort of funding some of our projects. And that's not to say we are neglecting other sectors. Education, for instance, next week we are meeting with Treasury to start bringing together the financial services sector and start coming out, sharing some innovative solutions with them to address specific challenges. But we are starting coming up with innovation hubs in hospitals, where within a hospital there's a hub that focuses on just coming up with solutions, addressing specific challenges. We found a good model through the awards program at the Groote Schuur Hospital here, in partnership, we are partnering with the University of Cape Town, and we are now implementing that at Better Goa Hospital, and then where there's a number of challenges. And we are working with Tembisa Hospital, for instance. They've supported us to help them optimize their theater utilization, where it is currently at around 30%. There's a project that we're working on with them. The maternal referral system between Chris Hani Baragwanath and feeder clinics, and for instance, the queues are caused by challenges around referral of patients between clinics and hospitals, and that's why we're wanting to come. We want to come up with a model, and we're using Chris Hani Baragwanath as our testing ground, so to say. And in fact, we are going to be working with young entrepreneurs that we're targeting through the Innovation Hub, who are going to help us come up with the referral system. We've kickstarted the process. And that will contribute to the reduction of maternal and infant mortality as well as, mortality as well as queues. And the pharmacy optimization project, which is another area where, pharmacies is where the queues are experienced. We have then decided to work on this pharmacy optimization project with Chris Hani Baragwanath again, and this is to help them with the automation of the back office to reduce congestion and queues, dispensing times, and eliminate stock losses. There's a number of challenges that they want us to have. This has already been implemented at Helen Joseph Hospital, and it is now being rolled out at Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital. The high volume cataract theatre, Chris Hani Baragwanath, for instance, have an estimated a backlog of 4,000 eye operations, and that is why we are now working with them to establish a project. We are starting a project at Baby Langen Hospital. We are actually working on a theatre which will alleviate this pressure on Chris. The specialists are going to go to that hospital in Soweto and operate from there. And the blood use optimization project, which we have to keep referring to some of the projects we've talked to, because once you found a solution and you take it to other, as I said, to other hospitals or to different localities, it becomes a new project. You are dealing with different stakeholders, and the dynamics are totally different. And it's not as if they are just waiting for us to come. It's very difficult to make that entry to say to them, we need to work with you on this. So here we are. We just started with Better Goa, and from May 2016 to January 2017, it's only a district hospital. They have saved 104,731. But if you look at the Far East Rand Hospital, where they have a blood bank, and it's a regional hospital, just for January alone, they saved 200,000 rand. But all that money goes into more facilities at the hospital, just improving different facilities within the hospital. So they're not necessarily sharing it with the CPSI. And so we are working on the same, taking the same blood use optimization. If you hear that at Chris Hani Baragwanath, for instance, they're spending 10 million a month on blood. And so once we tackle that, you can imagine how much money, 10 million a month, how much money will be saved and can be invested in improving other sectors of the hospital. These are all the hospitals that we are working on or working with. And then we have multi-year projects, Honorable Chair. For instance, the safety and security in schools is a project that we piloted with a young entrepreneur to come up with a crime solution that was implemented at Deep Slot. It's been taken up by the Ministry of Education in Gauteng, and it's been implemented in 140 Northeast schools in Gauteng where they had safety challenges. And more than 20 police stations are now linked to this system in Gauteng, and the same is happening in Northwest. Helen Joseph, the energy efficiency project, it's a multi-year project. We are implementing, we are coming up with a model. It has different elements to it. Charlotte Macleke took some elements and implemented in their own hospitals, and they've been able to save 3 million already, just implementing elements of this. And once it is completed, it's going to be obviously sold and marketed to all the hospitals. Hopefully the health department will cooperate with us. E-learning in Mthatha, 2 days ago, we handed over an e-learning solution. It's a multimedia computer centers to schools. We worked with MTN, and they funded them like 500,000 each. We implemented in 3 schools, and the two schools have been very successful. The results improved between 2015 and 2016. We're still looking for funding to take to reach other rural. These are extremely rural schools that we went to the other day. The children were so shocked to see a white man. I'm not joking. Mm-hmm. To see a white man, and they were asking to take photos with him. It is so rural. It's shocking. Yes, it was this one. We were shocked. It's only him. Our own. Our very own. But it's really math and science, and it's doing great work, even though we're not done. And of course, just to emphasize how important the AWAS program is, because if it wasn't for that program, we wouldn't be aware. We wouldn't know all of these solutions that we are now taking around. We've just found some very good ones. In 2016, end of 2016, the cable theft prevention project, many municipalities are struggling with that one that we found in the Free State. That municipality, by a young entrepreneur, was able to eliminate 100%. And we are hoping that we do work with SALCA. We are hoping that many municipalities are going to take. We need to go knocking and work with them. And there, those are some of them as well. I think we actually done. We won't talk to that slide, the youth and first development. There is a program with some of our partners.
Do you
remember?
Sorry?
Sorry?
We take it.
Oh, we are on 6 days.
Okay.
We pay within 6 days.
No, but which
oh, the CFO help desk? Oh, yes. May I, through you, Chair,
okay,
let
no
me
problem,
talk to
no
it very
problem.
Quickly?
That's very important, actually.
Yeah.
We need to hear that.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. We can share more information on the project, but it's part of the awards entries that came to us. Is one of the challenges DTI had was not only payment of the 30 days, but also other PFMA-related issues. So they established the CFO help desk. So that there's no issue of capacity or excuses that people can use in the system. So they contact the CFO help desk, it's recorded like with an IT request, and therefore the response can be processed and monitored so that you know exactly where your challenges are and can follow it up. But we can share the information. Lydia also just wanted to add something to that. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think like the queues, the issue of that of payments, it also has to do with the processes. I can give an example. At CPSI, once we issue an order number, we verify the banking details. We don't wait for the invoice to come in. I mean, if you give me an order number, it means I'm going to pay you somewhere in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So as we issue the order number, we do the safety net so that by the time we pay you after the provision of a service, your banking details have been verified already. And I think a lot of departments only verify when they receive the invoice, and that's where the problem comes in. So it's a simple matter of re-engineering of processes to say when do you do what, when, and it actually has helped us a lot. That's why we're able to pay so quickly at CPSI.
There you are, members. I want you to ask questions, and if you can be brief. Yes, Honorable Lissau.
Chair,
especially
I promise, Chair, because you are the chair, I was going to say with your good self as well, but because you are the chair, I can't say that, you know. No, but I think I like the way she says it's simple, it's a bit of process. And why other people can't comprehend the simplicity as a matter of, you get what I'm saying, Chair? I get the step then, Honorable GM, but not for you, but I'm just saying for your colleagues, by the way, that we have been saying continuously, Chair, and I urge you, you do that, that DPME, when we're dealing with such matters of service delivery, turnaround and the quality and all that, they do also have time to see it. I thought that DPME was going to stay behind so that they can listen, because DM said that must wait for this presentation, because they would have captured whatever their findings, then to say, CPSI is doing this, so, and urge the department to do that. So I'm saying there is no integration as a family under this twins, because we're 2 years. That's one. But also, Chair, the other one, through you, DM, you said in terms of e-governance, you are the champions of that, and also the issue of your, of the CEO of GCIS. But in terms of e-governance, what are we doing as a department to ensure that departments are moving towards that? Because others, honestly speaking, they're still believing on paper to make sure that you are record keeping and all those other things that Chair spoke about, and how, what is expected from us to assist you to make sure that we move towards that space. Yeah, thanks.
You know, honourable members, I'm glad that DM you are here, because I honestly think that over and above the state-wide audit that we need to embark on to assess the capacity of the state to deliver, we also need another process of reconfiguring the public service and administration, probably as a response to that. And the reason why I'm raising this under this in particular, I'm looking at this department that is doing such a fantastic job, okay? And you look at their budget, it's just, you know, it reminds me of Wally Adams. You remember Wally Adams, what he used to say to us when we were counselors? Wally Adams used to say, you know, when God, you know, looked at my work as a ward counselor then, you know, we're counselors, and he said, God smiled. But when God looked at my salary slip, God bowed down and cried. Now, you know, let me tell you why this is important. South Africa, and I'm going to keep on saying this, is a developmental state. And South Africa has a lot of challenges. Over and above that, South Africa, where it is located in the continent, it is supposed to really play a major role, not only in terms of making sure that South Africa prospers, but the entire continent. And therefore, innovation, research, development, and all that is actually very key to what we are supposed to be doing. Now, it looks like We have these guys, obviously, I can see why you are innovators, because you are really innovative. By the fact that you are able to achieve such good results with so little, it tells me that you are in the right space. But we probably need to have a meeting also as DPSA with National Treasurer. I honestly don't think that we have actually done sufficient work in terms of looking at where are the leakages in terms of our, you know, like you look at the entire revenue and we look at how much are we losing through the PESEL system. How much are we losing through the, you know, some of these departments that are processing invoices, manually mixing, manual processing of invoices and whatnot? Because believe you me, I honestly think that there are billions somewhere there. You may actually be paying people that are long dead and their accounts is just sitting in the bank as part of unclaimed benefits. Because nobody is going to withdraw that money at the bank, and the bank is not going to come to you and say, hang on a sec, by the way, you know, you still have this, we have this money coming in. But if your system is unable to talk to that reality, we are sitting with a serious, serious problem. And maybe later on, when we have an opportunity with you together, we need to talk to you about some of the frightening things that are happening with the Department of Defense. Scary. Scary. I mean, you are talking about the Department of Defense sitting with a system of 1983. In 2017. Now, I am saying we have not, I think it's good that as the And I'm sorry, Honorable Madaw, I'm not using this as an ANC meeting. But I'm just saying, since we came to power as the African National Congress, we focused more on delivering services to the people quantitatively and not qualitatively and not sustainably. As a result, we are now at a stage, because I'm excited, if you are looking at these things, some of the work that you are doing, by the way, I'm not talking about a hearsay. I went to Edendale Hospital the other day. I was impressed. I mean, there was a smell that I associated with the public hospital. A relative of mine was involved in a car accident in Edendale and was rushed to Edendale Hospital. Huh? No, this is what I'm telling you, that I went to Edendale Hospital, I was expecting that smell. And I was...
It was not there.
It was not there. I mean, I went to this public hospital and the smell was not there. And again, when I got in, I saw... There was a manager of public relations and customer service, her photographs, a cell phone number, the extension number. If you are unhappy about the services or maybe you've been in the queues for long, please contact her or any other concerns that you may have. And they have a very nice system as well, the way they were controlling the queues. And so what you are talking about here, about replicating this and this, I mean, I am talking about something that I experienced a month ago, and I was surprised. And I am saying, therefore, we can't have this department, we can't have the National School of Governance having the kind of budget that they have. It doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't make sense. We are talking about the National School of Governance. I mean, national government is spending over 2.6 billion, just national government alone. You are not even talking about provinces on training and capacity building. But the very school that you want to train and be the center of excellence in terms of doing even refresher courses, inducting the public service, transforming the public service, making sure that the public services get 77 million. No. It can't be. Where is this 2.7 billion going? Where is it going? And it's the same thing that we are now saying. You are going to be linking these two together. There is a department that is really achieving, because in one of your things, when I went home and I'm reading your thing again, I'm looking at this thing, I say, these guys are not saying this thing. Uguti, one of their core business is actually ensuring that through innovation, government realizes the value for money. You know, you are not saying that loud enough. When I read it, I'm going through it, and I'm saying, this is exactly what South Africa needs right now. Because we need to now develop a public service that is doing, that is oriented towards that. So, Minister, in short, I really, really do want to ask you, when are we going to actually do a state wide audit of the capacity of the state to deliver on its mandate and the reconfiguration of the public service within the context that says the way we are structured, even the way we are structured as the administration, I mean, we actually have paper chasers. You have the DG who is managing the DDG, the DDG is managing the chief director is managing the director is managing the assistant director, and nobody is doing the work, and then you end up with a lot of money going to consultants, and we are having with their problem with this 30-day notice and what have you, because all these people are managing contracts, they are not doing the work themselves. If you guys are doing the work themselves, the fact that you are saying to me, you went to the school, the fact that you left the office, you went there, that means you are actually hands-on, you are doing the work, you are not outsourcing it to somebody else. And that is what I want to appeal to you, DM, I really, really wanted to appeal to you, because we really, really need you guys, maybe not today, but it's something that you need to be discussing with the minister. We want a proper and thorough presentation by the department that is telling us about how are we modernizing the state, and modernizing the state under that, the things that are going to come, you can't modernize it unless you know what you have and what is going on. So you can have, you need to have a statewide audit. And once you do that, you already have the pockets of the key departments or units that are supposed to be well-resourced, because they are our engine. They can be also be spearheading the exchange of best practices and whatnot. But Program 2, Innovation, 14.4 million. I'm sure even Mervyn Dex has that money in his account. 14.4 million. Okay. Maybe Matau maybe has a double of that. And these are the people that are supposed to be taking us forward. Really, really, really. I mean, honestly. And if you look at innovation, already 8.7 million is going towards salaries. They're only left with 5.7 million to deliver the work. No, guys, I mean, honestly, I would not have done my job if we can't achieve this thing. If we have to bring you and National Treasury here, we have to. Pella, we can't have a situation where, honestly, that departments that are supposed to be making South Africa tick. You know, now have you noticed that we keep on exchanging the positions? Nigeria is number one, we've become number two, now we are number one, Nigeria is number two. We are competition out there. And Itina, we are so relaxed, we are so complacent. It's like, you know, the world is moving. And that's all I can say. Your presentation, I don't have questions on them, because I can see that you've achieved phenomenally great work. I mean, given the limited budget that you have, I'm really impressed. And I wanted to get a presentation in this committee where you are going to be responding to these issues, Minister. Maybe 5 minutes
for you, Minister, then we close and we get the rest.
Chairperson, a diagnostic audit was done in 2009. And that diagnostic audit culminated into what we now call the National Development Plan. So that work was done. If you check on Chapter 13 of the NDP, some of the problems, not in detail, are outlined. Lack of coordination, lack of this. But if we go back for more information, we could probably just get copies of the diagnostic order. Because remember, it was then taken public.
No, I don't think you understand me. I'm talking about capacity.
But I'm getting
and the style and these issues that you're talking
to, or coordination.
That's where I'm getting to.
Mm-hmm.
The diagnostic audit was done. That information is available.
Yeah.
We could actually, and I would implore that we actually go back to that. Because even today I was asking for the audit itself. That audit was taken publicly. And there were sessions with ordinary members of the public that culminated into the development of the National Development Plan. Now, challenges were identified then. And that is why you see, remember that was in 2009? In 2012, the NDP was launched. Now, what then told us as the ANC's LNG subcommittee was that we need to take the NDP seriously. Hence, today we talk about the macro organization of the state. It is based on the findings of the Planning Commission that inform the development of the National Development Plan. And we're saying, in the way that the state, including government, is configured today, we will always have the problems that we have. And that is the suggestion. And fortunately, these documents have now been released into the public. People are free to comment. Even the opposition is invited to comment on those issues. Because the most important thing for all of us today is to make sure that the state is effective. It delivers on the aspirations and ideals of our people. In the way that it is currently configured today, we will never be able to do what we would want to do as enunciated in the National Development Plan. So I'm just giving you a very short answer, but I hear your point when you say, let us meet and talk about these things. Because the problem with us is we talk today, tomorrow it's a new topic. We're not going to go back on the things that were, that were discussed today. And I think some of these things also need to go back to cabinet. And as you talk to other ministers, including the minister for monitoring and evaluation, these things really need to be taken into account. I mean, one of the things that I have always lamented about, all of us go to China. It doesn't matter whether it's a DA government or an ANC government, we all want to go to China. We have not sat back to say, let's develop a repository of all of this information. So that if the chairperson wants to go to China, she must go through all of this information to determine that what we have here does not help her. And then go to China for whatever reason you want to go, including the UK. So many administrations have visited the UK and Canada. It's a fad. But come back, maybe people write reports. I certainly do. Maybe people write reports. Where do these reports go, and how are they filtered into the system for learning the purposes? We can't be doing one and the same thing all the time and hoping that we're going to get better results. We visit all of these countries all the time. There's no repository of information where people can go back and say, best practice on this issue is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It is found in this country. So that we don't have to be going all over the world trying to find solutions. When, if we look at what we have seen, we'd be able to tailor-make some of these things to fit our environment and be able to deal with this, to start with the process of service delivery. But I agree with you, Chairperson, we need a more in-depth discussion on these matters. But I think, and I've always lamented the issue of the CPSI, I've requested from our DG that at least monthly, he ensures there's a slot for the CPSI to present to FOSAT. I don't know whether it has happened, and I don't know what the reason for that is. If the directors general of the country do not want to hear this information and they do not want to work with the CPSI. I don't know what more to do and what more to say. I've conveyed this message to our DG so many times. This information we have not even taken to Cabinet, because I don't remember CPSI presenting any of these things to Cabinet. So how does the executive, how will the executive know that there are pockets and centers of excellence in this government? But at what point, again, do we give confidence to our people to say there are problems here and there, but there are also very good centers of excellence in the very government that is trying, centers of excellence that are trying to mitigate some of the problems that we experience. Because Baragwanath, Chris Anipat Baragwanath Hospital is not going to go around telling the story of what was brought by the CPSI. Government at a national level must start doing that. The GCIS must start doing that. But as long as they're sitting in some corner unknown and only known to the DPSA, unfortunately, even the issues of budget will never be addressed adequately. But I would also want to hear in Parliament questions raised by you sitting here as to why it is that the budget is that much. And just to brag a bit on their behalf, they used to be my favorite, but they no longer report to me. You will see when, if you just look at travel invoices, it's not because people are corrupt, it is just because we use travel agencies that are going to charge us much more than it would be when you book for yourself. They do that. They don't go through a travel agency to book for the accommodation and stuff. They've decided to do that themselves. Now, if you could see the amount of savings, now imagine if the whole of government were to do that. How much savings would we derive from doing things differently and not going through these expensive, what do you call them, travel agencies? We used to have a travel agency. We used to have a travel agency under SAA at some point. I don't know why we got rid of it. We could have been able to consolidate and leverage on numbers and economies of scale to book at one center for the whole of the state. It could have come out much cheaper, but also give us an opportunity to inject and introduce efficiencies in the system so that it still becomes a cheaper option than going somewhere else. But that's a discussion for another day.
Okay, members, thank you very much. I know, because all of us have to run. I'm actually late for that meeting. No, it's a salute. No, but members, I think the most important thing for us is that one of the key areas that this committee, and I'm hoping that you are taking the minutes, Masole, because we really, really need to be following up on this thing of the reconfiguration of the state. Because, I mean, if you look at the way, unless you reconfigure the state, as you rightly put it, Deputy Minister, there is no way you are going to realize all the objectives, all the targets and the dreams and the aspirations that we have set out in the NDP. There's simply no way you are going to do that. Because the way we are doing business is so wasteful. And it's full of so many leakages. And unless we rethink and just go on a total overhaul, maybe...
And give your input at the study group.
Yes.
So now it's been sitting at the study group.
Yeah, okay. No, that's fine. That's fine.
With the problem with this subcommittee, you will ask for input, it will never come. Some of them do come to, and it's never by somebody, because honestly, it's very debilitating to work with comrades that are not going to give you. Because they sit in positions where they have access to all of this information,
people have worked in environments like those people can come home. They've worked in environments where they actually have, they're smarter than me when it comes to certain areas of work. But I can only ask the study group, please provide the data.
No, only definitely don't worry, we'll do it. But I want us to limit this to this meeting because this is a portfolio committee or a portfolio committee meeting. I strategically would like us to have a report. Maybe we give the department, and there is a reason why I am saying that, maybe a concept document on the reconfiguration of the state. Maybe, I don't know, I wanted to suggest that maybe we take some time. It's either early next year. First thing next year is our main focus. And I'm taking into account the other processes that we have to undertake now. And regarding the input and whatnot on that, me and I, we have to sit down and Dex, by the way. Because we need to actually give the input on this thing. We cannot be complaining all the time so that these things can find their expressions here and then they become the policy of government that we are reconfiguring. Konamanje, we are sitting with a big problem which is unnecessary had we reconfigured. We have a threat that we may have to retrench people. But how do you retrench people when you are in this economic climate and the state currently, whether we like it or not, we can't. And I keep on saying this, and I say this more because I'm more exposed to macroeconomics things. You know, we can't think like Mandel and Fleming. They are basing their models, economic models, on UK and Britain, who have a one-figure unemployment rate. We are in South Africa. We don't have just a double-digit unemployment rate, but we have almost half, if you include even those that have stopped seeking employment. Now, how are we going to afford that? If we retrench those people, where do we say they must go? What do you say? In other words, whether we like it or not, the issue of reconfiguring the state now and modernizing it and making sure that, because the reconfiguration is also going to be saying, what are our priorities right now? If our priorities is that innovation is our priority, the exchange of best practices, you know, the citizen involvement in that innovation process and that kind of thing, like the things that you have been doing. Obviously, that is going to find its own expression even in where this entity is located and the budget and so forth and the resources and the kind of support that they are getting from all of us. But if we are not going to do that, I'm afraid we're not going to be able to achieve that. So our undertaking, Minister, is that we are definitely going to input on the other processes. But in respect of this one, we actually do want at least the first meeting in the next year. Next year, in 2018. Yeah? Why are you? Yeah. In 2018.
Because we're going to
continue. No, in 2018. We are in the... Okay. No, I'm saying we are going... No, the portfolio committee is saying, meaning... Can you listen to me, meaning? The portfolio committee is saying first meeting in 2018. We want the DPSA to come and present a document, a concept document on the reconfiguration of the state. And on that point, I am adjourning this meeting, and I thank you for being here. The workshop is on the 22nd, and members, no, please do make sure that you remind all of them. On the 22nd. Yes, on the 22nd.
But to me, we have such a fabulous ministry. We can achieve a lot with this